So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review.
Welcome, everyone, to Review Away. It's John Volek waiting, and based on that cackle, it can only be one man, folks.
Hello.
Damian Abraham is back.
I was going to say Nate Milton. I made it in. I got my passport. I flew in last night.
What's going on?
It's a red eye. But no, alas, it is me, Damian. Nate Milton.
You know what
yet.
We have to do is when Nate's here, we've got to meet, put Nate and Damian together.
If we had another person in this room, John, it would count as an orgy.
I think that would be.
Because we are that
close
to each
other. We do have a guy who could record it in way.
Well, I'm not saying we should do it, but I'm just saying we are so close to each other right now.
We're very close.
And I've never seen Nate in person, but I think he's a larger man.
You know what? We should do a review of Raw, the four of us, that Monday when he's here. The night
that would be
no
fun.
Surrender.
I would definitely do that.
Are you down?
I would absolutely love to. Yeah,
we'll even come to your place. We can do it with the baby.
We'll wake up the baby. Like, you're never gonna believe it. You're never gonna believe it. Yeah, we should definitely do that.
That would be.
I can travel too.
Awesome stuff. Let's set that up. We have now promised this in podcast.
Absolutely.
So we don't deliver.
We could do it
anger.
At the Vapor Social in Toronto.
Because
I know it offends some listeners.
I'm up for that.
They'd definitely be down for that too. But I know it offends some listeners about the drug use.
What?
No, remember there was someone who wrote in an email a couple weeks ago.
Saying how you and I make too many drug references.
Drug references. You're liberal. I'm going to say this is one of the most even-handed shows when it comes to drug use and alcohol use. Like, you guys are both never, ever negative, but also never, ever positive on the subject. In fact, there was once a legendary debate between the two of you about whether or not John was able to say that marijuana was safe, quote-unquote, having never tried it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Remember that?
That's right.
It was like a heated debate.
I think I'm the biggest defender of marijuana, of someone who has
never
used
it. I was the same way until I tried it, and now I'm even a bigger defender.
See, I like arguing in favor of pot and having that in my back pocket in an argument, because it's always that, oh, you just want it legal because you're a pothead. No, I'm not, actually. And that's a great argument to
absolutely.
Have. Whereas I've never used it, and I'm all for people using it.
And I think Wei, you know, you're right. There's some merit. It is a powerful drug, but John, you're right too. It should be legalized. So I think that's why I love this podcast, because it's like a point counterpoint.
Well, John and I actually, I mean, as much as as many interests as we have in common, I find like we're actually quite different.
Absolutely. Yeah, that comes across too.
And that comes
especially when it comes to security and movie theaters. That was a heated one.
Still pissed about that.
Maybe just laugh.
Don't bring it up.
What idiots.
No, I love when like it gets like super heated about something between the two of you, especially if the viewers, if the listeners could see us in this room right now, I could only imagine an awkward tension in this room.
I find more of our arguments come over Skype, and it's always tougher because in the back of my head while this argument's happening, I'm like, oh, if our connection cuts out right now.
It's going to be super awkward.
Let's pick up at that part. You were calling me an asshole. Yeah. I'm a little disappointed. I thought for sure you'd be coming in here with a Ribera Steakhouse jacket.
You know what? We saw one in what we're going to be talking about today.
Oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah.
We totally saw one with Mr.
Goniske. Yeah, but no, I was going to go. I just, actually, as John's kind of alluded to, I just got back from Japan.
Tell us about that.
I was telling Wei beforehand where I got there. I thought I was going to have a lot more time than I did, because I got there at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon one day. Immediately went, met my translator and was like, do you know anywhere that sells vinyl records? He's like, no, but I'm sure we could find somewhere. And I'm like, to the hotel, please. So we go to the hotel and we check in, and my band arrived there the day before, so they weren't there. And I went to a record store, spent all my money within 30 seconds of walking in, went to a sushi bar, ate a bunch of sushi, was like, okay, now I'm going to go. And then I was like, no, I'm going to go take a nap. So I took a nap, you know, got up. But then that night, I actually met up with my band, and they were like, we found this area that's got all these little tiny bars. And the bars are about twice as long as the editing suite we're in, which is tiny. So imagine a large bathroom, I guess, like a very large bathroom, maybe.
This is a small bathroom.
Yeah, this is all right. You can put a shower here. No, it'd be a small bathroom.
What would you say would be the maximum occupancy in a bar like that?
25. 15. That, yeah, right. 15 probably more likely. These bars, and they're all themed, right? And there's this one called, like, La Jetée, and it's filmed around French cinema. And you can buy a bottle of whiskey, and Quentin Tarantino's been there and signed a bottle of whiskey, and they have it on the wall. And they have all these celebrities that have bought their bottles of whiskey, and you sign them, and then you come back in. You're like, oh, I'm back. That's my whiskey. You drink your own whiskey, right? And so there's all these cool bars, and they all have their own little quirks and stuff. And there's this one called Deathmatch, and my band's telling me it's like a wrestling-themed bar.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh, my God, it's a Japanese wrestling bar called Deathmatch. So we go there, and we sit down, and it's a little weird. It's a very tiny bar. We're looking around. It's just like tons of horror movie things. There's like nothing about wrestling. And so we're sitting there for, you know, a few hours just kind of chilling. And we get talking to the owner of the bar, and eventually I'm like, oh, crazy. He's got, like, a Tiger Mask versus a Black Tiger video cassette. I'm like, oh, cool. Oh, crazy, wrestling. He's like, oh, yeah, this used to be a wrestling bar. I'm like, oh, what happened? He's like, no one likes wrestling in Japan anymore.
Hmm. Oh, wow.
So he changed it to a horror movie theme bar.
And he just kept it Deathmatch.
Just called it Deathmatch. He's like, hey, makes sense as a horror movie, too. But he said, like, everyone used to come in there. Like, all the wrestlers back in the day used to come in there and drink back when it was kind of hopping for Japanese wrestling in Japan. But then I found a used bookstore and bought some old wrestling programs, but never got to go to the Ribeiro Steakhouse and get my jacket, unfortunately.
That's too bad. That would be – I don't care what it costs. I would buy a Ribeiro Steakhouse.
Apparently, jacket. Someone told me on Twitter you're not allowed to have one unless you're a worker.
Really? I think that's more a custom among the wrestlers. Not so much they won't sell you one, but I think it's kind of like
– I thought maybe it was owned by a wrestler, and he's like, no, only for the workers.
How do you prove that you're a worker? Yeah, you know, wouldn't you buy
I did an interview with Taylor Wilde, and she gave me two chops, so I think I've taken a couple bumps, you know?
I think you could pass.
I think I need that jacket.
You're contributing to wrestling podcast culture.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. No, I
Your friend dated Stephanie McMahon.
That's true.
I think that's you are 6 degrees connected
and gentlemen,
to wrestling.
Breaking scoop here, I realized that in March or February, I'm going to be going on tour with Fozzy.
Whoa!
Chris Jericho. Yeah. We're doing a tour in Australia called the Soundwave Tour. It's this big touring festival we did a couple years ago, and it's like, you know, this year it's Metallica, and they've always got like huge bands and metal bands and punk bands and all sorts. Anyway.
It's like, I mean, this guy's toured with the Foo Fighters, he's toured with whoever, and then he's like, Fozzy.
Jericho. I know, I'm just going to be like, and I know, because it's the way this tour works. Like last year we had lunch, like, we could have met Slash if we felt that there would be any point in, you know, sharing a moment with him, like, other than him telling us to kind of go away. So, but with Jericho, I got tons of stuff I can bother him about.
You can go on many different angles with him, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I will meet Jericho. And I will probably try and get him to do this podcast I've been threatening to do forever.
Yes.
The music podcast. Also, I talked to my friend who, my friend Tom, who used to write for Pitchfork, but he's the one who did the interview with CM Punk.
Yep.
For GQ and Daniel Bryan for GQ. Anyway, he wants to do this podcast too, so we should all kind of...
Let's make it happen, man.
Let's make this happen.
Let's make it happen. Yeah, people want more Damian Abraham, not
well,
less.
Well, and we also need less Britney Spears segueing back into the law and less Foster the People segueing out and Carly Rae Jepsen.
You were not a fan of Foster the People.
No, No.
We got rid of that, but... Hey, man, Agnew and Braden have, like, hijacked the law when it comes to the music. I have I said this on the law. I have nothing to do with the music anymore.
I think Wei, you and me need to talk about John being led astray by Sean, by Agnew.
Yeah.
No, I said Sean because I've got a friend named Sean Agnew.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know how far astray John's being. Like, John is kind of leading himself astray in many ways.
I'm worried. Hanging at the tattoo bar, getting into fights.
Oh, yeah. I want to tell this story because I don't think I told this on the show last week. After the tattoo incident, the next day after Review of Raw, I get a message on Facebook, and the guy is telling me it was a name I'd recognize. He had used to work with WWE Canada, and he was like, I just want to apologize on behalf of everyone at the Tattoo Rock Parlor that a bunch of idiots ruined your night. I am the DJ at this club every Friday night. I just started there. Next time you're there, I will get a round of drinks for you and all your friends.
Oh, wow.
So, Damien, you're invited whenever we go to cash in the shots
this
in the
could
bank.
I have a feeling there's going to be the relaunching of the Raw parties at Tattoo on Monday night.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
We'll dance to Edwin.
Well, now that they're in the West End, I could go if they're in the West End. Like when they were in the East End, even though I grew up there, I couldn't go.
Yeah, so, Fox and Fiddle. I got stopped by a security guard at the CNE on Friday who flagged me down. John. And I turn around, it's a security guard, and he's like, what happened to the Fox and Fiddle? You should be working right now, sir. You have a job to be doing. Anyway,
so it's like
these are the random meetings I get.
I forget where I was. Oh no, it was at North by Northeast, and there was someone, one of the security guards backstage is like, "Hey man, can I stop you and get a photo?" And I'm like, "Absolutely!" So I take a photo with him. He's like, "Yeah, I'm so excited for this weekend. Like, Matthew Good's going to be here," and he starts running through all these Canadian artists that I've heard from other people can be notoriously difficult. He's like, "I'm going to get photos with all of them." I'm like, "Sir, I totally don't mind taking a photo with you, but I guarantee you, one of those people this weekend will wind up getting you fired if you go up to them and harass them." So I really promise, just please, I don't mind, but just don't do it for your own sake, because those people are not as friendly and forthcoming with photos.
I wanted to know Damian Abraham's reaction to Pussy Riot.
Oh, man, I was –
this is crazy how much the publicity this has got. There were protests in Toronto on
I was at the Toronto protest.
Oh, you went to it.
Not Saturday. I was at the one on Friday in the afternoon. I think I reacted to it so strongly because it's people in a punk band getting busted for essentially being a punk band. Now, whether or not you agree with the appropriateness of doing it where they did it, I think everyone can agree that at this point the punishment that has been mitigated out to these poor people is ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Well, I think it was when they were in jail for this long, it was ridiculous. Now it's prison on top of it. So I think, you know, as someone that has done my fair share of ridiculous things that I think some people would call stupid, who plays in a band with a swear word for a name, I had to kind of, you know, show up and speak for, you know, and obviously there's tons of injustices that happen all over the world. In Toronto, there's tons of injustices happening right now, I'm sure. But, you know, it was just the punk band aspect kind of spoke to me because I'm like, you know, by the grace of God, go I. I also was nearly arrested in Russia last summer, so.
How'd you get arrested? Almost arrested.
We had an after party. An after party by no one's definition of what an after party is. We had a bunch of people that we were friends with from, because we played Moscow now twice. And this was the second time we played there. So we had a bunch of friends we had met the first time come back to the apartment we were staying in for, like, you know, a small get together type thing. And it was rowdy, but not rowdy by
fuck Vladimir Putin.
Not fuck Vladimir Putin rowdy. And the next thing I know, I'm like, okay, everyone should maybe leave now because, you know, we got to get up a flight early in the morning. They're like, they go to leave. They're like, we can't leave. There's eight Russian police outside and then eight Moscow police outside. And then more showed up and then they eventually came in. They took all the staff of Vice Russia who brought us there to jail for the night. And then they stayed there and watched us sleep. And I knew they were in the room still because every couple minutes I'd hear the radio go off and someone speak in Russian.
Oh,
and then I would be like, nope, the guy's still in this room. And also our guitar player and our drummer got into a fight on stage. And once again, we are not this band. They decided to settle it with a drinking contest and had 18 shots of vodka each.
Oh, my God.
And we're vomiting on each other basically in one room. And so the police came in. They apparently thought there were porno films being shot there, because this
when you're vomiting on each other,
it was like they're like, this apartment that Vice had put us up in, go figure, had been used in the past to make porno films.
Yes.
But yeah, no, I felt so bad for the poor staff of Vice Russia being dragged off to jail, and here we are. And like,
wait, based on what? Just the assumption that they were filming porno?
Yeah, it's
you
like
could jail people.
Basically what I was told, like, you know, like when we got there, I'm like, you know, because we were smoking some pot and stuff and people were drinking, like, the first time. They're like, I'm like, what's the deal with, like, police here? They're like, stay away from them. And we're like, okay, well, once we get caught with them, they're like, offer them money. And then we're like, okay. And if that doesn't work, it's like, hold your passport out and just hope for the best.
Wow.
You know, it's like one of those things where And it's so much like the whole time you're like, oh, I'm in Europe still. Like it's like I'm in Europe. And then once in a while you're like, oh, it's not the same as being in Belgium or, you know, being like the sort of dumb, you know, North American person. I guess it's the same when I was in China for the first time, you know, like being in China for the first time. You're like, oh, it's just like being in, like, you know, in anywhere else in Asia. It's just like another giant Asian country that's like, you know, when you're in Shanghai, it's easy to forget. And then you go to other parts, you're like, oh, this is a very different type of country than any other country in the world at this point.
Russia would be right up there in terms of countries I would be very fearful of running into any problems with, Mexico being maybe number one,
Mexico,
which is where you are going.
Yeah, we are. Mexico, I think, is – Mexico City, though, apparently is very very different right now than the – obviously the regions along the border.
Yeah, they have their election, I think, coming up in the fall.
It just happened, actually.
Oh, it just happened.
I think, apparently, according to the Conan podcast that I listen to, MLK.
Every wrestling fan source for Mexican
yeah.
politics.
Apparently, the election did just happen, and now it's like – but Mexico City, from what I understand, and this is once again from – a gringo. Is that
that's an offensive term. I
is it?
I think though that we would be allowed to say.
Oh, it's like a self-appointed offensive term.
Yeah.
It's well,
like
I think
cracker.
I think like, what has been done to the poor people of Mexico in the name of North Americans, and I think we deserve the title maybe because like if you look at that country, you know it's funny because I've heard they've decriminalized drugs there now. Like a lot of South American countries are decriminalizing drugs, and it's like. Not really going to solve the problem when the biggest customer for the drugs is still right above you, you know, which is the United States. And but from what I understand, Mexico City is the one place that the crime really hasn't entered in any great way because that's where the federal government is. And it's like – that's the one area they're kind of like a no-go to.
Yeah.
From what I understand.
Yeah. It's it sounds like it's – I don't know. I never know if it's – you know, how much of this is kind of just pumped up
yeah.
for fear? How much of the – like obviously there are legitimate murders occurring, but I don't know if – would that deter you from traveling to Mexico way?
I felt that
– I live in Scarborough. I don't
yeah. care. Scarborough's been – had a rough go this
yeah.
summer.
Yeah. Apparently body parts found right where
weekend.
I drove past today.
So, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cordero's was telling us this
oh
morning.
My
yeah.
God.
Just, right by a mall, right? Or –
No, by like this sort of like a next to a golf course. I think Corderas was telling me it's a little like park area, but apparently it might have connections to the body parts found in Mississauga.
Wow! Well, there was last month when we were leaving a TSN one night after a post show for UFC. We were leaving. It's me and Jay were in a car. We're driving on to McCowan and 401, getting onto the on ramp, and this SUV had been pulled over. And like 20 minutes later, like we drove past the car and with the side, there's all this grass. Like 20 minutes later, they found like a dead body in the grass. It's been stabbed.
Whoa.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Well, it's funny. I was reading this interview with my friend's band and they're like, yeah, my neighborhood's crazy. Like someone got shot down the street from us the other day. And it's like, I don't live in a crazy neighborhood by any stretch. I live at Dufferin and Davenport area. And someone got shot not too far from me the other day.
Yeah,
and, like,
people get shot.
You know, it goes to show you that violence is something that happens everywhere. And
yeah.
sick people are something that happens everywhere. And it's like, you know, it goes to show you can't really escape it. And it, like, obviously there's a lot more violence in you know, border regions of Mexico than in Toronto right now. And so I don't want to pretend like it's the same. But – my first time I went to Russia, I was like, oh, this is – people's fear of this place is hugely blown out of proportion, crazy blown out of proportion. And you know, then I went back the second time and had that weird thing with police. And I'm like, oh, okay, maybe it's not. And then when you talk to the locals and they're like, yeah, it's not really. There's some really sketchy things that happen here. And same with China. The first time I went to China, I'm sure – my perception of it is like sort of this like, oh, there's nothing wrong here. You know?
You're very optimistic.
Yeah, very optimistic. Like,
North Korea.
Well, because like the first time you go there, like, you know, and especially me because I get super terrified before I travel. I'm like, oh, my God, what's it going to be like? And then you get there and you're like, it's not bad at all. And then it's when you go back the second time that you're like, oh, but I see all these things I didn't notice the first time. So,
well, we were talking about death and that leads over to Tokyo
Deathmatch. Yeah. Or Yokohama Deathmatch.
Yokohama Deathmatch, right. I wrote it down wrong here. You chose this one, Damian.
Yes, I did.
Kind of out of nowhere. So let's get your thoughts here on picking this one, a Tokyo Pop release.
Yeah, I think I mentioned on the show before, these are actually what got me really back into wrestling was like actually specifically these videos a little later on, but like I stayed at this friend of mine, this guy Tony Erba's house, who actually played in a band. Plays in a bunch of legendary Cleveland hardcore bands, but playing this one band actually called Gordon Solie Motherfuckers. That's like they have this song about killing Eric Bischoff for killing Eric Bischoff because he ruined wrestling and other wrestling theme songs. But anyway, we stayed at his house and he showed us in one night like the craziest array of Japanese wrestling. And one of the things he showed us was the final match from this Yokohama Death Match, Kudo versus Shark, and I just remember being in shock, like having gone at that point from basically WCW, WWE type thing to which was getting extreme by 99, but nothing like this.
There were no.
They would have never
size.
Carved up a pretty woman in the
face.
Tried to make this match, by the way, and we will get to it. No rope, electrified, explosive, barbed wire, and barbed wire barricade, landmine, double hell death match.
It's
love
these Vince
skips.
Russo gimmick fest, but with no gimmicks he'd ever.
Part of that name just is completely unnecessary. Double hell.
Double. Well, I think it's a double hell. I think the double hell describes the fact that on each side of the ring, there's no ropes and there's those exploding pads.
Where's the hell?
I think that's because landing on barbed wire that explodes would be hellish.
Okay.
Wouldn't it? But Kudo gets up and a piece of barbed wire stuck in her.
Yeah, but you already have barbed wire inside
that's
the name.
But it's exploding into you. From
exploding is there, too.
With gravity also. Like when we're going to get to it, but when Kudo gets powerbombed by Shark and she lands on the ring apron and it's like, oh, and then she just rolls into the barbed wire. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's a double shot.
And of course, the connection here to live audio wrestling is that Dan Lavransky does the color commentary along with straight up John Watanabe.
Well, yeah, these videos I got introduced to because when I worked at Suspect Video, we used to have these in there and I would pop these in. And I was telling Way before, we had a bunch of the VHS ones, and the tonal shift when Dan comes on, because the first couple of these...
I can't remember the guy's name who did them before.
Way did.
Eric something. Dan mentioned it to me last time.
Yeah, and he, like, they would do, like, these, like...
Skits,
and, like, and they would do, like, zany commentary. It was kind of like a really, and I can't believe I'm going to say this, dumbed-down version of the Juggalo...
Or championship
yeah, the Insane Clown Posse, the first
Stranglemania.
One. Strangle Mania.
Yeah, yeah.
Which you guys reviewed too. But kind of like that, sort of like, yeah. Look at this guy. Oh, that would hurt. Oh, I'm on fire.
And they made up storylines.
Yeah, and it was and like, everything. It was terrible. But then Dan came on, or maybe this was first, and then there was like an era of legitimacy. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Dan was talking about this yesterday, and he just said how they basically needed somebody to kind of take it into a different direction. Treat it more as a from a more historical standpoint,
yeah.
And to put over the characters and the storylines that are actually occurred in Japan. And so they asked, I believe, Jeff Merrick was originally their contact, and then Jeff said, you know, Dan was more into the Japanese stuff at the time, so Dan got the call, and then they flew him in to shoot these.
Oh, so this was shot in L.A.?
Yeah, these were done in L.A.
Oh, crazy. I was wondering that. I was wondering if it was done in Toronto or Los Angeles.
Because Tokyo Pop is actually like an anime and manga.
Yeah, no, that's where I'm sure they got into Suspect from, because there's right. So much anime that in that store. And so I'm sure it was like a catalog release, but phenomenal stuff here.
Do you guys want me to blow your minds into double hell with my date trick here?
Yeah, sure.
It was SummerSlam of 2001 when I was watching SummerSlam at the movie theater. Back when the Law still broadcast up there at Young and Norton, and I remember Dan Lavransky was there, and he was telling me, yeah, I've got to be up early tomorrow. I'm being sent down to L.A. to shoot FMW, the next day being August the 20th of 2001, and here we are recording this podcast on August the 20th of 2012.
That is eerie. So
mind
this is like
fuck.
This is the anniversary of the recording of this.
This is the silver anniversary.
Yeah. Sorry, I closed my phone off, and then I remembered I have all my notes on here. So.
Oh, very well. We do need those notes.
But yeah, so I would watch these videos, and it was this one. Well, this one, and there's a couple of them that I just was blown away by, and that's to this day I think why Mike the Gladiator Awesome is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time.
So you watched this before FMW. Oh, sorry, before ECW.
Before I'd seen ECW, yeah. Because ECW at that point, I don't think – I guess I might have had TNN, but I don't remember having it in any – and I just wouldn't watch it. I would watch – I still would turn on pretty much weekly WWF and WCW at the time and just kind of watch, you know, what was going on. Like I was watching the night that the – the transition happened, where the Monday Night Wars came to an end, and WCW was
Finger
swallowed
poke
up.
Of Doom, you mean?
No, the night that it was swallowed up, like when Vince McMahon appeared on WCW, I was like invasion. Flipping through the channels, and gotcha. Could you even flip through the channels and watch them live at that point?
Not in Canada.
No.
Yeah, that's right, because Nitro didn't air until like Wednesdays. Then back, Nitro never aired live in Canada.
Yeah,
which was always there, but
I guess I would watch Nitro on Wednesday
because they're on the same channel. They were both on TSN.
They were both on, but it was something. Yeah, Canadian wrestling fans never really got to get fully into the Monday Night.
Yeah, because I always hear people talk about it, and I'm like, I don't think I ever did that. But I would watch wrestling kind of through all that period. But I know I'd never seen anything like this.
Because I would say most people get into FMW through ECW, you know. Because,
yeah.
It's been like, has Paul Heyman spoken about FMW in the past?
I don't know if he's specifically
spoken about it.
Because
they did have a talent share agreement.
Yeah, I mean, like, Jinsei Shinzaki came over. They used Hayabusa came over for that Heatwave pay-per-view in 98. I mean, there was a lot of talent back
and there's also an ECW Invasion storyline in FMW.
Yeah, they did that for an FMW. Yeah. That was a release that I remember on a video as well.
Yeah, because I've seen that too.
But let's just first of all talk about FMWA and just like – you watch this product, and it's like there is no way this could ever, I think, air in the U.S., whether it be now or back then. It was something about the Japanese culture, though, that you could present, you know, pure style professional wrestling, but then also have a big market for something like this where two women would use a sickle on one another.
I feel like the Japanese culture is a culture
of crazy shit. They love it.
Of extremes, and extremes in many ways. I mean,
bidets in hotels.
Everywhere.
That's not an extreme.
It's probably the best thing in the world.
That should be everything.
It's not even a bidet. Like, there is a bidet function, but there's also just like, it's like legit a butt cleaner. And it's got a picture of a butt with a thing coming up, and it cleans your butt. And it's like,
you pick the male part or the asshole.
Yeah.
And then there's this little gun comes out from behind the toilet.
It just sprays you. And it's awesome.
How many times have you been to Japan? Was it only for that K1?
I've been in three times.
Three times you've been? Wow.
Yeah.
I saw this, you know, it's crazy. I have pictures that I can show you on my phone. Once again, this
of
is
the bidet.
No, this is
of
this
me
is,
on the bidet.
Yeah,
experiencing the bidet.
If you gentlemen heard about these weird bars that they have, no, this is
the maid cafes.
Oh, I definitely saw the maid cafes like crazy. But no, this is this new thing. I don't know when last time you were their way. Sorry, I've taken some photos since then. But I don't know when last time you were their way. But this is like a fairly new thing they've added to. To the nightlife, there's a bar, and you go in, and you see that. Two women driving that thing.
What the fuck?
A woman torso. John, you can see it, too. It's a woman's torso with robotic legs. She's giant. That's like 14 feet tall.
Like a Megazord's legs.
Yeah.
With
it's like a centaur and a Megazord.
With like Princess Leia in Jabba the Hutt's slave outfit type of body.
But with ginormous breasts, and she has two Japanese women dressed in maid outfits that are similarly themed driving.
What is the purpose?
It's entertainment. Here's another photo of that one. Like, just give you the scope of how big this woman is.
It certainly is entertaining, but
it's not just this woman. There's like eight or nine. It's like the Power Rangers.
I can't make sense of it in any way. Is there like a TV show that they're promoting?
No. It's a nightclub. It's like you can't go as a kid. Like, it's a bar. You're supposed to go drink at.
Okay, you have to post these up on the message board because everybody needs to see this. And
it's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
Somebody has a story. I'd love to hear.
It is the craziest thing I've ever seen. Like, I don't know why. Like, you know, I'm loving the Japanese podcast, by the way, but I think they should need to go here.
Oh, yeah, they can explain
and do a review.
Yeah, forget a primer on these Japanese organizations. Give us a primer on Japan.
Exactly.
The country.
But like I say, I mean, Japan, I feel, is very much a culture of extremes. And even yet, pro wrestling, which originally originated in the West, they could take something like that and they just really take it on different levels, whether it be, you know, in their strong style, whether it be in the cruiserweight stuff, or whether it be hardcore. They take something and they just really run with it. And I think the one constant, though, is that the storytelling is, you know, everybody looks at an FMW or you know, ECW, and they think, oh, okay, steel chairs, barbed wire, that shit's crazy. But at the heart of it all is the storyline, and it's the drama behind professional wrestling, and I think they do that very well.
Absolutely, and I think Japan in general, like, there's the otaku culture, which is like a there's like this like obsessive nerdiness to something. And when you're into something in Japan, you're into it the whole mm-hmm. way. So, and it's weird because like if you're into an organization, it seems like you're into one Fed. You're like, this is my Fed, and this is the one I really like. I like FMW or like I like New Japan, but you know, and there's some crossover, but not like nowhere near as what you'd think. And that applies to like punk there too, right? Like mm-hmm. there's a traditional Japanese punk, which I guess would be like strong style wrestling, which is Gizum, Gaze, Tetsuari, Paintbox, like some of my favorite music in the world. But then there's also like there are scenes where it's like, oh, this is like a screamo hardcore band, or this is like a positive youth straight edge style band. Like it's weird to see all these like different genres replicated in Japan too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is one of the most incredible places on earth.
And this was their 8th anniversary show from April of 1997. Someone actually found the entire show and posted it up in the message board.
I still haven't been in the message board. I got to check on the message board.
Oh, dang.
I listen to all the podcasts, but I just, you know.
There is a group of people who vehemently
hate me.
Hate the message board.
they
have left their – they have their own group on Facebook for those people who can't stand the message board. So
it's like a splinter organization.
It was like the Funk Masters of wrestling as compared to FMW.
And I'm not nowhere near an expert in FMW, as illustrated by the fact that I've never actually checked out the original show. But I would say that that it always seems like there is like an invasion villain force coming in every show I've witnessed, led by someone.
Well, you probably know this better than either of us, but what was the layout of professional wrestling in Japan at the time in terms of, okay, you had the big two in All Japan and New Japan.
I think third, FMW, right?
Yeah, I mean, FMW had a gigantic like popularity peak in the 90s. It was like Atsushi Onida is kind of front and center here of FMW. He left All Japan Pro Wrestling, where a really good comparison to Onida is Terry Funk, in that Terry Funk was this well-regarded professional wrestler who completely changed his style later in his career. And when Onida, he left All Japan Pro Wrestling, eventually formed FMW and presented this kind of different this different context of professional wrestling. And Onita did a lot of crazy angles. If you remember, he ended up working with Jose Gonzalez and actually did a whole storyline based around the man who killed Bruiser Brody, Jose Gonzalez. And then they did a video where he stabbed Onita, and this led to a match. It was probably one of the most tasteless angles in professional wrestling history.
That is so much worse than Katie Vick. It'd be like if WWE did it like a Ben angle. Like, it's like that level of just like, holy geez, horrificness.
And that goes back to Japan here. And I mean, it's like, if this happened in North America, I mean, people would be outraged by
absolutely.
This.
Oh, absolutely. Wayne and I were talking about some stuff off air, like some Japanese wrestling stuff that I've seen that I don't even think we should talk about on air, but like, just like some of the stuff that you can see in that is just like, oh my gosh. And I guess it's over with now, but this is more in the 90s. But like,
I remember when a buddy of mine ordered like a something like the most violent matches in history on like a VHS.
Is that the one where Sabu breaks his legs or something trying to jump through a table at one point?
It might be.
Okay.
It was years
My
ago
friend
I saw this. But I was like 13 or 14 at the time, and this was like afterwards. I felt like I had just watched like a snuff film or something. Like, I should not have watched this. It felt like illegal. It was like the most violent shit. And it was all like Japan stuff, like scorpions biting guys and just like unbelievably violent wrestling, where even at the age of 13, I was thinking of what the payoff was for these guys and how much they could be making here in a high school gym in front of 200 people. And they're going through fucking glass with scorpions underneath.
I think deathmatch wrestling becomes something unto itself eventually. Like, this is still tied to wrestling, but like there's some stuff that you see, like King of the Deathmatch, some of that stuff, it's like, this is a new thing. Like, some of the stuff Necro Butcher does, you're like, this isn't, there's no way you can look at what Ric Flair does, and you're like, yeah, this is the same. Mm. It's like comparing Slayer to Carly Rae Jepsen, you know? Like, not that I'm either saying
what
that
what a hate-on for Carly Rae.
Well, I'm not saying that I'm going to put on either one to, when I leave the studio today, but it's like just like they're not the same thing, whereas this is kind of like the perfect middle ground.
Did this – do you remember, John, if this aired on the Fight Network, this particular episode?
It might have, because we, for a time, had the rights to all these FMW releases, which would have included this.
In fact, when Fight Network first went on the air in 2005, September 2005, the first show that we aired was King of the Deathmatch, I believe.
Yeah, I remember when Fight Network went on, because I had a cable box at that time, and so I was watching Fight Network and seeing these things on TV, being like, "Oh, crazy!"
Though I can't imagine us airing this main event with women being caught in exploding barbed wire.
Isn't
after
midnight anyone's game?
Yeah, but we would air this stuff all day.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I don't know if anybody paid much attention.
What was the other thing that used to air late night and fight?
Honey Wrestling. To this day, that has to be the most mentioned programming we ever ran.
I'm sure Moses Nimer still this day gets the Bluvies. Remember, CTV used to run those porno films, and I'm sure he gets asked about those more than anything else.
Yes.
The real cat fight.
And the real cat the fight. Real that's cat the other fight. One I was.
Baby Blue 2. That's what those were called.
Yeah.
I remember seeing those, and I was always like, what was Baby Blue 1? It was always for the Baby Blue 2 presents.
That's what Videodrome, the David Cronenberg movie, is based on. It's based on, like, how far Moses Nimer would go, like, because eventually the show a snuff movie, and the character's based on Moses Nimer, played by, I forget who plays him in the film, Woods, James Woods.
That's cool. Him.
Anyway, bit of, not to become, like, live audio film nerding.
This used to be his office.
Really?
Yeah.
This is Cronenberg's office?
No. Moses Nimer.
Okay.
This is Zoomer Media before.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, crazy.
Yeah, this would be Speaker's Corner.
Office. He told me to drop out of university and come work for him when I was in my 20s, and I did, and I didn't get a job for him.
I had a boss who told me to do that as well after my second year of university, and I said, that doesn't sound like a good idea, and I didn't.
You are a smarter man than I.
Well, they saw talent in you, Damien.
No, they didn't, because they rescinded the offer. But anyway, this is not about the Damien woes getting to the top. This is about FMW.
Well, speaking of woes, I nearly had one here because my tape nearly got chewed up. Well, you don't enjoy my transitions.
That was good. I liked
it too. I love segues, and you're a great segue person. I'm appreciating.
I force them. My tape nearly got chewed up here, this VHS way.
I noticed.
Yeah, you got to kind of like put your finger in and like reel it away. I had to fast forward. Almost got my whole tape chewed up, and I knew Way still had to watch this as well. So
yeah. I could have lent you guys the DVD. I have it on DVD.
That's true. Well, it was either that, and then this guy found the whole fucking 3-hour unedited anniversary show, but I was not watching the 3-hour version. We are reviewing the VHS 85-minute viewer-friendly version.
I feel so much worse because I'm breaking kayfabe, but everyone knows we record on Mondays, and knowing that I'm making you guys talk about wrestling before a 3-hour Raw, and then you have to talk about wrestling afterwards.
We do this every Monday, so it's all good.
Oh, but I make it way worse because I'm way longer than normal.
We like chatting with you, though.
Okay. What else would we be doing?
We'd ask you more, but I know you always say that, like, oh, if I come in, that fucks up my listening for that week. So we try and space them out for you.
It's true.
So I didn't even know when this event actually began. I was, like, starting to take notes, and it was this long trailer for a future Tokyo Pop release on the Best of Hayabusa. I started writing down, I'm like, interview about a trip to Taiwan, upcoming release. I was like, oh, fuck, this was just a commercial. And then I went through a Tokyo Pop ad, a Vampire Princess Miu ad. This was great. And then finally, we got to the opening here with I wrote Ken Watanabe here, who would be Mr. Ken, but it was John Watanabe.
Mr.
Straight
Ken.
Up. Every time we say his name, we have to
straight
point up.
Straight up.
In case you didn't get it. Straight
he,
up.
He also does the worst bang bang I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Later on.
Well, it was John Watanabe and Dan Lavransky here at a desk. Very nice desk.
Yeah, it looks great. Nice. Like, it looks like a real, like, you would think this is like, they have their own English language commenting team.
Yeah, I don't know the gravity of how big Tokyo Pop was.
Well, but I will tell you one thing I noticed on another viewing of this. They sprang for Dan's flight, but they did not spring for his wardrobe. Because if you watch his outfit, he's got a black shirt underneath.
It's an FMW shirt.
He's an FMW shirt?
He brought me back one of those.
Because I just kept seeing a yellow logo. I'm like, well, they didn't even get him a black shirt for underneath his sports coat?
Yeah, it actually was. It's an FMW logo that they have there. But yes.
Still looks terrible.
I think they made him shave as well for this, too.
Yeah, I think so. He looks pretty clean shaven. Because I knew, that's the other thing I should add. Another reason I fell in love with this is because I knew Mouth from way back. back when he used to do Dr. Mouth's Medicine Cabinet. So right. I was like, oh, crazy. Dr. Mouth is doing the commentary on this. We should watch this. So that was like cool. And I also filled in for him one time on his show.
Really?
Yeah, filled in with another guy, Ed Fox.
So you met Mouth.
Well, it's weird. Like, I met him years and years ago, and then one time I was actually in a restaurant on Queen Street with my wife and kid and some friends of ours, and he came in. It was a Sunday, and I guess it was like he's having dinner with someone before coming to the show or something. So as I'm leaving, I'm like, looking forward to the show tonight, and he looked at me like I was a lunatic. He's like, thanks, man.
Maybe it wasn't him.
No, it definitely was him. I know.
That was pretty distinguished.
I know. I'm like, I've seen Bruiser Brody before, you know.
Wow, so how old would you have been at that point? Because he stopped doing that show in like 98.
He stopped. Well, they were the first people to get fired from CIT in the infamous when CIT did the big lockouts. Mods and Rockers stayed on and eventually got fired. But when they did the first rounds, he was one of the first people locked out, I remember. And that would have been... Yeah, like I would have been 17, filling in for a show.
I did a show there when I was 17.
Oh,
actually.
Really?
I got. Like,
oh, we talked about this, I think.
Yeah. Way worked at CIUT as well, though not at the same time. So anyway, that's Booker T's book just arrived.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think that's what that is. Anyway, we got a package. Anyway,
I thought it was drugs.
It could have been drugs. Yes,
we got the drugs you ordered, John. They came in the mail. No, I'm just kidding.
It's for Way, probably.
Oh, it's Way's drugs.
Yeah, I need them in the morning. It's gonna get wasted. Okay. Anyway, we started off here. It was pretty much just clips of the undercard here. They kept these really, really brief. First up, we had Tetsuhiro Kuroda, Hayato Nanjio against Crypt Keeper and Flying Kid Ichihara.
Crypt Keeper has the best mask I've ever seen on a wrestler.
This was like no outfit. Just the mask. That was it. Just typical outfit.
If you see the side of the mask, the mouth, it was a 3D mask. The skull came off his face because there was depth. Like you could see through the jaw when it came out. So he's like wearing I wonder what it would feel like to take a bump into that mask, you know, because it was like a three-dimensional. I guess you guys were nearly as blown away. Yeah, it's like a 3D skull.
A sculpt?
It's sculpted out mask. Yeah, it's. Huh. I don't know. I thought that was pretty. I've never seen a wrestling mask like that. You know,
breaking new ground here at FMW's eighth anniversary.
This
show.
Is what ECW. If ECW, when they did the relaunch, was going to do that stupid hybrid horror wrestling thing, they should have gone like this and had Skeletor the wrestler. With like a 3D skeleton mask like this guy had.
The finish came here when Crypt Keeper delivered a sit-out powerbomb and then Ichihara hit a moonsault to pin Nanjio. So pretty just basic highlights here of the finish. Not much you can comment on.
I found it really jarring to see some of these highlights with live commentary over top. Because usually when you're watching highlights, you're on SportsCenter, you just get basically a narrative of what happened. But I thought it was very tough to watch Dan and John try to call it as if it was live, yet still seeing these white flashes in between, and clip to clip. So.
One of the things I didn't like was when they would do their replays, and it would always be when someone hit a big move, and then they'd go to cover them, and they'd cut away to show the replay, like the full screen replay. It took out any drama of a false finish. Right. Next up was a women's tag. We had Kaori Nakayama, Michiko Umukai, and Chikano Shiratori, along with Mizuki Endo and Yoko Akita against Linus Asuka, which was spelt wrong, Eagle Sawe, Crusher Maidomari, I'm butchering some of these names, Michiko Nagashima, and Miss Mongol.
I thought this was awesome, the six-way.
Really close.
Was it six-way or eight-way?
It was like a 10-woman tag.
Okay, 10.
Yeah. 10-woman tag, which was described by Watanabe, this is no mid-card comedy match.
No, they ran down WWE a lot.
He took all these jabs at WWF throughout this show. Yeah. It was like...
You could tell that they... it almost became the running theme of the commentary. You won't see that in the WWF. You won't see that. But I think this is such a fun, I got to check out the 3-hour show because some of the spots in this were awesome.
I would have loved to have seen the full thing of this.
And one of these women they mentioned, she eventually became the biggest name, the woman in yellow and black. can't remember her name, but they're like, oh, she eventually became like the queen of FMW.
Linus Asuka, I think, standout woman here in this match. It ended with Nakayama hitting a top rope Frankensteiner to pin Miss Mongol for the win. But yeah, it looked good in clip format. I never enjoy watching matches where it's just like clips and can't really get a good vibe of the match and everything like that. I prefer to just watch it in its entirety. But obviously here, you know, another thing here, they did release these in 2001. DVDs were well part of, you know, culture at this point. Mm. An 85-minute VHS. Was there a reason we needed it to be 85 minutes?
I think they wanted it to be the same
length. And people were still buying videos like crazy. Like, I think that was in the period where you were releasing videos at, like, $9.99.
Well, this whole event was, like, 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Was that too tough to get a fucking EP?
Yeah.
I'm not really sure. I don't know what the reason is. Maybe
I was wondering if this was like a tape. Like, you know, WWF would release those tapes back in the day that were like abridged pay-per-views?
Yeah.
I was wondering if this was like a Japanese abridged version of this pay-per-view that they sold in Japan in the aftermarket type thing. And
I always just hated edited versions of stuff. Yeah, like if I buy a CD, I want all
the
songs.
Whole thing.
If I buy a movie, just give me it all. I'm buying this. I'm going to own this. I'll find time to watch it. Don't worry about my attention span. Yeah. I'm opting into this.
Mm. Maybe they were like, maybe one of these matches is just so good. They're like, no, this is going to ruin the main event. We got to show it in clip form.
We then had Jinsei Shinzaki, who was previously Hakushi in the WWF, taking on Super Leather, who was previously Corporal Kirchner in the WWF.
I love Super Leather. Like, doing a leather face from Texas Chainsaw Massacre gimmick, the only thing they change is they give him dreadlocks. So he's like a Rasta.
This was like Mankind, Vampiro, and match them all together to somehow get this Super Leather concoction.
Yeah, and then give him
a guy who was doing it before all those
before,
guys.
Before, yeah, and give him a Bob Marley wig. I think like this is my second favorite gimmick after the John Wayne Gacy gimmick in XPW.
Oh, fun!
Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh my gosh! In XPW, they had a guy.
That's an event we have to review XPW one day.
It is like it is ridiculous XPW. Like it makes this look like WWE now. But it's he would walk to the ring, this fat guy that looked like John Wayne Gacy in clown makeup, with a bunch of young wrestlers shirtless with him, and they do like a serial killer. Oh my god, tasteless, completely tasteless. But Super Leather's a close second for me.
Shinzaki hit a power bomb here for a two count, and then Shinzaki came back with the Heavenly Lock, which was a camel clutch with the arms crossed of Super Leather, and got the submission victory here. The Heavenly Lock.
So did Vince? Was Vince the one who's like, I gotta put those characters on your face when we came over? Because remember he had
he had like all over his face and all over his chest.
That's from the movie Kwai Don, the Japanese.
I haven't seen it.
It's like an amazing Japanese movie. It's actually written by a Greek, the first Japanese citizen. But
I think Shinzaki was already doing this in Japan. I had
really
seen him
I was always wondering that because I'm like, man, Vince must have seen Kwai Don if he makes him, because that's also now become, if you're a Japanese wrestler, you have to write characters on your face.
Yeah.
Like, it's what has to happen, even if you're just pretending to be a Japanese wrestler.
Mm-hmm. And then kind of the last of kind of the shortened down highlight versions, it was a six-man tag here. Gato and Jado, who everyone, I think, remembers for like 1 week they were on ECW. That gets brought up by every North American fan. Yeah, that time they were in ECW against the Impact Players. It was a Friday and Saturday night, and that's all they were in for. One TV taping and a house show. That's all they did in ECW. But that is what every non-Japanese wrestling fan remembers Gato and Jado from. Not as the bookers for New Japan right now.
Yeah,
not
how long was Austin in ECW? Everyone still talks about his, like, how many matches did he have in ECW?
Austin's was really short because he came in and like,
like, he did a lot of he did a few promos, right? But he didn't actually, he did Mikey Whipwreck?
Yeah.
Was that his only program?
I think he was only in for a few months. I mean, Jericho was there for 3 weeks.
Yeah, like, sometimes it's not how long, it's just what you do while you're there. Katie Vick, how long was that? She's only there for, like, what, 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
They teamed with the late Kodo Fuyuki to take on Headhunter A, Headhunter B, and Hisakatsu Oya. And I guess the headhunters here were the story of this match. The heels here, they were part of the Funk Masters of Wrestling, which was kind of your anti-FMW group.
What a great name. The Funk Masters of Wrestling.
Yeah.
What fits into these characters?
The Funkosaurus.
What year was this?
97.
What year did the first Funk Master Flex Comp come out?
Ooh, I don't know.
I wonder if it's Terry 90s. Funk in the airport being like, that's an idea. Like, John is way to Japan. Here's what we're going to call it.
Fucking great. Here's what we're going to call it.
The Headhunters, they go for a doomsday device, but then misses a top drop kick delivered to the other. These guys, it was just like, holy fuck.
So big. So big.
Fuyuki hits a series of clotheslines. They drop him. They drop one of the Headhunters after three clothesline attempts. Then we see a flying headbutt and a splash by the Headhunters to Gato for a two count. Finish comes with one of the Headhunters hitting a moonsault off the top to pin Gato. That no is- joke, these guys were like, push him 450.
It was the slowest mount to that. Like, it was an awesome move.
A moonsault, though.
To see him do a moonsault, but, like, still, it was so slow when he got up to that moonsault position.
For the guy to take that, Jesus. Like, I wonder if these guys are still walking.
Oh, God, I doubt it. No, you wouldn't survive. You would have a heart
attack. How would your knees survive?
So, yeah. Oh.
The style.
And there's tons of these matches. There's scaffolding matches with them involved in Japan that you can see.
Yeah, two guys that are, like, such spectacles and got... You know, very
did
small.
They ever work?
They worked in ECW, okay, but never really got any fame. Like, it's not like anyone looks back at the Headhunters and has any kind of idea of who they are.
It's weird because you could see, like, Vince, like, this is a look. Like, this is, like, two twin, like, monsters coming in.
Then we go back to the desk. Mouth calls this one of the greatest cards ever.
Oh, wait, sorry. Did two matches finish with a moonsault?
We had a Frankenstein. Yes. Yeah, okay. They did. The first one did.
Yeah, it was like some agent wasn't doing their job backstage.
Yeah, those FMW agents. Watanabe says all about mixed emotions like revenge and compassion. And that sets us up for a big video feature on the Mr. Gonsuke and Hayabusa feud featuring Gonsuke in a Ribera steakhouse.
Gonsuke.
Gonosuke?
Yeah.
I've heard multiple versions. Gonosuke.
And also the spellings would change when they would, because they would have like the kanji and then they'd have like the English spelling from the original Japanese version on the screen and then they'd have it subtitled and a different spelling of the name would come up. I was trying to figure out the whole time, was it G-A-N-N-O-S-U-K or G-N-N-S-U-K or G-N-O-S-U-K? SUK. Forget it.
Well, this was the sighting of the first and only Ribera Steakhouse jacket. Oh. This was like the ultimate wrestling cliche look.
A mullet, like a bleached out mullet.
All you need was the fanny pack and the Zubaz. And he was awesome. Set for 1980s pro wrestling.
It's amazing that this is how he came back. Because in the story, they're like, this is the show that he came back. And this is what the outfit. So it's like he left and this is what he was just doing in his off time. Chilling, wearing the Ribera Steakhouse jacket.
What was the storyline here?
The storyline was that these two had come up together, and then...
Gonosuke and Hayabusa.
Yeah, and then Gonosuke, you fucked me up with this pronunciation.
I'm sorry.
Decided to turn to the dark side and join the Funk Masters of Wrestling, and now his childhood friend, they must come to blows. And Gonosuke says that this is going to be the last day of you. And these were one of the many... the camcorder promos we got, where we got the camcorder graphics.
Yeah.
These look like shit.
Yeah, they look terrible. But I wonder, were those graphics, you think, on the Japanese version, or do you think those graphics were added by Tokyo Pop?
I don't know, but...
What graphics?
Where they have where it's recording.
The title safe area and recording.
I would think that would be the
Japanese version.
Japanese,
really?
Yeah.
Okay. Also, there's a part where Tanaka confronts Hayabusa about taking a stand, and... Yeah. He is the best actor in the world.
Oh, yeah.
He is amazing in this. Like, this promo is unbelievable. Like,
even though you didn't understand it?
Didn't understand it, but it's just, like, his emotion. Well, it was subtitled.
Yeah.
So, like, I figured it out, but it's like, I wanted to cry.
I thought Gonosuke was awesome, too.
Oh, like, Gonosuke, too.
The thing is, like, these promos, even though we couldn't tell what they were saying, like, we had subtitles, but, like, just simply the body language and the facials and the tone in which they delivered these promos, you understood what their emotions were.
Oh, absolutely. And just, like, the most raw emotion. Like, that's the thing. I don't think there's ever been a period where there's been that kind of emotion, like, anyone's really attempted in North America to kind of offer that kind of emotion, like, serious emotion type thing.
I like the way that they did these backstage segments, too, in that, you know, there's no fancy lighting here. There's no big splash of red light in the background. This was, like, it was it felt like they just stumbled backstage, and these camera people just happened to be there. They were surrounded always by photographers with flash bulbs, and they weren't properly mic'd. It was just like mic'd, like they're not supposed to be. And they're doing these segments. It felt very real.
But I bet you a WWE program, if you were to take a camera and put it on the side, that's what it would look like, because there'd be like a million people behind when you're like seeing two people in the office discussing in private. Like you guys, you know, obviously work in television. You know how many people would be involved in that shot? Like there'd be a producer there. There'd be a camera person, boom mic operator, probably like a PA or two.
I prefer that so much to the setup.
Oh, absolutely.
Soap opera like conversation.
Oh, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. Like I think this way works so much better. And I think when TNA was hit, when Hulk Hogan was like, "Yeah, brother, we're gonna do this thing, brother. We're gonna have like social media and TMZ." If they had done it like kind of like this more, where it's like the fans, like if like a fight spills out and a fan records it, and then you have that put it online, I think that can work. I think there's a place for that.
Tout it.
Maybe 15 seconds of it. See one punch. It took more than 15 seconds for that headhunter to get up to the top rope for that final moonsault. Tout that move.
Tout out the setup.
Tout out the setup.
We had Victor Kanonis here, who is another guy who has passed away on this card. He was in the corner here for he was kind of the international liaison for the Funk Masters of Wrestling.
He's everyone's heel manager, too. Later on, he's Shark's manager.
He's the leader of the Funk Masters of Wrestling, or manager of Funk Masters.
But he also, because Shark, they didn't say that Shark, like, in the final match. Like, he it was almost like he was her manager, too. Like, they showed in one of the clips, he's with her. So it's like he must have been just the heel manager.
This was also a hair versus mask match. We should stipulate Hayabusa putting his mask up on the line. This is where I also noticed the thing that Watanabe would do when there would be a big move. He would be like, "Tope! Tope!" And he'd be like, in case you missed it, he would yell it again. Senton! Senton! Whatever. Everything we all have our weird quirks. I'm sure you can point out tons of mine.
Did Dan say whether or not they stayed in touch?
No, they did not. Okay. No. It was... I don't know if Mouth looks back as fondly on these tapes as maybe you do.
Okay.
That's the sense I got.
I was going to be like, he'd probably do an interview about it and everything.
Yes.
The thing is, like, commentary is actually one of the hardest things anybody
can
do.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And
I would say, like, him now, like, he's being probably a more confident mic person. Him and you as a commentary team, I think, would be amazing.
Perhaps. But, like, to me, doing play-by-play, like... That would be a lot of work for me. I've never done that. I don't think Mouth had done anything announce-wise
at this
point.
Like, also, they probably threw them in there with very little, like, coaching because you can, ranges, like, direction-wise, what they're going for.
These are anime producers. This is not a pro wrestling company, and just from having done some of it myself here at the Fight Network, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah, very difficult. I can imagine. That's the thing. Like, I do not envy.
Yeah. And something like, you know, calling a move twice like that just seems like a very standard wrestling announcer cliche that somebody would probably think would sound good, but when you do it, it doesn't.
That's why I ask, because this guy always struck to me like someone from Central Casting. Like, when you watch it, you can tell that Mouth is actually a fan, but this guy, I'm wondering if he was on a script or something.
I think he was a fan. I think Mouth had mentioned that he was very familiar with Japanese wrestling as well.
I thought he did a pretty good job of just trying to introduce you to certain characters and who they were.
He knew wrestling moves.
Yeah, I definitely got the sense he at least knew these
people
and wasn't just fish out of water.
But the art of commentary is a completely different thing. You don't necessarily need to call every single move. You don't necessarily need to double up every time you call a move either.
Apparently in WWE, you don't need to call any moves.
Yeah.
You just get up there. Well, call this finisher.
Maybe that.
So anyway, the match begins.
Before we go, how much do you guys know about Hayabusa?
I know the tragic end, obviously, of Hayabusa.
I've heard that he's recovered from that.
100%. That's what I was about to say. Until I watched this, and my friend was like, "I wonder how he's doing these days." And Wikipedia'd it.
Yeah, he's not doing financially well.
He's not doing financially well, but he's 100%.
He's walking
mobile.
Now.
Yeah,
really,
full recovery, and he said, like, don't rule out a return.
That's amazing.
So, yeah.
Last I heard of him, he was like, he was still confined to a wheelchair, but he was like doing karaoke now.
Yeah. That's what they said. That he, and he, but he's 100%
but he's walking.
That,
that's
yeah.
great to hear.
And he can walk and everything. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
amazing. Okay. Well, this was Hayabusa definitely in his glory days. But Hayabusa, I would say perhaps the franchise star of FMW.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And there's a, like there is a story of Hayabusa documentary that. The trailer on the beginning of this that I have at home that I've watched and
where he goes to Taiwan and
yeah they tell like his whole story and then but then they obviously stops before he broke his neck and
yeah
stuff.
It was like November 2001 and he was doing like a quebrada lion salt
from the second rope apparently too
lion salt Jericho's
he,
move
yeah yeah but does he do that from the yeah he yeah, does second rope second. Yeah, second rope lion salt that's right
I remember Jericho afterwards was asked about it too and he's like I won't watch that I don't need that mental image in my head just for when I'm doing the move and. He wasn't going to stop doing the move just because someone got hurt. But
wait till Soundwave in Australia. Someone's going to finally see that move.
Oh, no.
What a watch.
Hey, dude, have you ever seen this? No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that.
Do your fucking job as Jericho, international incident, and Damian Abraham end up in Australian cell. How many continents can Damian be arrested in?
I've only ever really been arrested in North America, I should say. I've had a couple close calls, but never knock on wood. Australia's going to be the first with Jericho.
This was at one point where...
I'm going to make you love me, Jericho. No, I'm just kidding.
Watanabe is calling the match. Plancha. I mean a senton. One of those Lucha Libre moves. One of those Lucha Libre moves. That I don't give him an out for. Come on.
Well, also, like, it's a tape. Like, why do they have to do live? Like, why couldn't they do other takes? And why couldn't they, like, pick
wait,
it up
wait,
from there?
You've produced wrestling... You did the Pro Wrestling Noah tapes. What would you have done in a situation like that?
I probably would have told him to stop and retake it.
Yeah.
But sometimes, though, you get caught up. You're either lazy or you just want to capture the live feel of it, and people make mistakes.
Anyway, Hayabusa went for a quebrada later on in the match, and Gonosuke got his knees up. Then he broke a stick and began to stab Hayabusa with a stick.
He also, they showed in the pre-package, he also had stabbed Onita with that earlier in the back, too. So I guess that's one of his moves.
Hayabusa went for his 450, which was called the Firebird Splash, and then a...
Firebird Splash.
Firebird Splash! And then Falcon Arrow! Falcon Arrow! For a two count. I think one of the worst things, you know, Joey Styles, I think a lot of people enjoy, but he was also very influential, I think, to a lot of announcers, and... It works for Joey Styles. I don't want to see anyone else try to be Joey Styles.
Especially when you're doing like this post style of commentary, which is what Joey Styles would do on a lot of those tapes, where it sounds not of the moment. Like when you watch JR get excited, it's like you're always seeing it of the moment because it's mixed so well.
And you and they also those commentators also pick their spots. It's not like leg drop, leg drop.
Oh my God! Collar and elbow tie up. Oh, God. We get a Hurricane Rana, another near fall. This is when they cut the replay. These annoyed me, these near falls where they would do your picture-in-picture replay. Or don't go to a replay. I don't need to see it that bad. I got a rewind button. Anyway, Hayabusa misses the Phoenix Splash. I couldn't believe how many of these maneuvers I have had ingrained in my head because of the Nintendo 64.
Video games. Yeah.
What's the Japanese game that everyone translated?
Fire Pro Wrestling?
Fire Pro Wrestling, that's it.
Yeah, we're going to do a video game review. We've got an insider to join us.
No, we haven't.
Really?
Eventually, someone who can really talk about what's going on. Because I have no video game wrestling knowledge after N64. That's when I dropped out of the video
games. I remember playing those games, and those were fun, but like the wrestling games in the last few years have not been very well done.
Really?
No, the controls are not very good.
And finally, Hayabusa hit a second Falcon Arrow and then got the win. A decent match with the two that was pretty much punctuated with the story behind this whole match.
Yeah.
I will say, Hayabusa, I mean, he's never been the crispest high flyer to me, like compared to...
He's very much like Sabu, who's fully influenced by Hayabusa.
And they had a feud at one point, Hayabusa and Sabu.
Oh, yeah, in ECW, like they were basically compared as mirror images to one another.
Yeah, when they did the ECW invasion, it was led by Sabu. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very accurate comparison.
I always wondered if Sabu... was so influenced by the guy that, like, when you take the last four letters of Hayabusa, you can spell Sabu out of it.
That's true.
Where does Sabu come from? That's such a random name.
I don't know.
And the pants as well. They had very similar looking
like
types.
It was clear there what the influence was.
But in terms of style, both had like, you know, very reckless, high-energy type of style. And that was part of the reason why they were so successful.
I think is like, I don't know, one of my favorite types of style. Other than like, mm-hmm. like sort of strong style, which I really do enjoy. But I like that kind of reckless, fast, like like ECW late 90s kind of style, or mid 90s, I guess, more.
Now let's talk about the post-match here.
Oh, my God.
This was intense.
This was amazing.
They need to steal this for WWE. Yeah.
Anyone could pull it off. I think North American fans would hate this, to be honest.
You
basically had the babyface crying.
Yeah, but if you
for
had
his
John,
friend.
If you can figure a way, like, there's nothing that you can do with John Cena, but if you have Rey Mysterio.
Okay,
like,
let's talk about the finish first.
We'll speculate.
Yeah. All right. Hayabusa gets on the microphone. He says, "I don't need to cut your hair." And he just goes on and on about their friendship. "Apologize. Let us start over." And here, he had a mask on, and you could tell he was crying here. Yeah. He was so moved by his best friend turning away. And this was so great because he offers his hand. He says, "Let's forget the hair. Just shake my hand. Apologize for your evil ways." And Gotosuke goes to shake his hand, kicks him in the gut. I thought this was awesome. Power bombs him, and then on top of it, rips off Hayabusa's mask.
And then goes to set him on fire.
Oh, what a heel. This I liked because, first off, the idea of "I won't make you cut your hair," I think that's bullshit to not pay off on a stip. Instead, they gave you one of the stips.
Yeah, exactly.
Just in a heel fashion.
Yeah. This was like, I mean, in 20 minutes time of watching Hayabusa, you can't really get too emotionally involved in the character, but just the way this played out, it felt heartbreaking.
Oh, absolutely.
Here's a guy who had spent his entire career crafting this personality, crafting this image, and what a fucking bullshit way to have that completely destroyed and robbed from him. And what great heat for the heel, huh? Like, to lose the match and still get what he wants.
Like, they could have done this with Steen and Generico.
Oh, like, they could have.
Yeah.
Could you imagine? Like, this is, like, the one thing that I think, like, you know, if you ever do revisit that feud, like, that's the one, I guess, the one place you could take that feud that it didn't go, but, like, have. Because it's just the way this ends is you're, like, especially being a fan there, you'd be like, oh, come on, they're not going to cut his
perhaps,
hair.
Perhaps
the
best unmasking I've seen.
Incredible.
The character.
Incredible. Yeah. And then they go to set him on fire.
They go to set him on fire, and Jinsei Shinzaki makes the save so that Hayabusa doesn't get torched by his best friend.
And Hayabusa wrestled unmasked for, like, years afterwards.
Yeah,
and
then as H.
Yeah, and then they did a bit of remasking at one point, right?
Because he wasn't getting over, I suppose, without the mask.
All right, so that was your very heavy storyline match. And from there, we go to Wing Kanemura at Tsuchi Onita and Masato Tanaka defending the good name of Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling against the Funk Masters themselves, Terry Funk, Gladiator Mike Awesome, and Cactus Jack in a Kerry Von Erich
match. Forgot the terrible bang bang going into
this. Oh, that's right. He did throw over here.
He throws over and does a bang bang, but he doesn't even have his thumbs up to do the bang bangs. I'm like, Dan should have done the bang.
And this was when Foley had been in the WWF for a full year, and they had a bit of a talent exchange at this point where actually, the following year, they sent Shawn Michaels to be a referee on I believe, a card that did feature ECW talent at the time.
Oh,
so
wow.
WWF and FMW did have a kind of loose relationship at this time.
So did ECW and WWE at that point, too.
Yes. Who else came to the WWF from FMW?
I don't know if anyone came over to WWF. I think it was more just they gave a few guys over to FMW, and I think that it was because of Victor Quinones, who had the connection with WWF. They had not started IWA at that point, but I think he was kind of the go-between to set this up.
And also, WWE was still not doing too good in 97, right? Or is that beginning of picking up?
That's when business had not.
This was April 97.
Yeah. So this was like a full year.
So they were probably doing
it
for the money. They were probably losing.
Yeah. Make it guys that, you know, take them off a house show and we'll make X amount by sending them over. I mean, they were sending some quality guys over, too.
The Japanese team here comes out to this cover of Wild Thing.
Worst cover of Wild Thing.
Sung by a woman?
And I'm like, is that the original version that they came out to? But then I'm like, if you're going to steal a song for this DVD release, why not steal a good version of it? Like,
I don't know. Was this exclusive to the DVD, you think? Or was this live?
No, probably not. They used tons of commercial music in Japan. Yeah. I'm sure this was probably what
I'm
they
used. I'm just, like, thinking, like, in Japan, is this the hip song of the time?
Yeah, but
this,
like, how many songs? I mean, they don't come across as the most hip. I mean, you don't see a lot of, like, progressive music on the... It's like...
Anywhere
these are all, like,
wrestling.
80s rock themes they came out with, you know? Anyway, we had... they showed highlights of a prior death match between Cactus Jack and Kanemura. Obviously a misleading match if neither died.
No one died.
And terrible. They mentioned the last time. This is the very last time that Cactus Jack would wrestle as Cactus Jack before he would bring the gimmick into the WWF a few months later. And they start the match off. Terry Funk takes a pile driver onto a table. And then Kanemura hits a tope to the floor.
Kanemura also is my favorite babyface. He is like the most babyface of babyfaces.
Oh, like a actual
like a,
baby
like
face.
A baby's face.
Yeah.
I never understood the spelling where it was like instead of the it was always pronounced Wing Kanemura so that like the I was like censored or something and I always it was Wang Kanemura or something.
It's W asterisk
N-G.
I-N-G.
Is it I-N-G or just N-G?
No, they put
So what's the asterisk?
I have no clue.
So weird.
W-H will know.
Yeah. He's going to give us a whole like 500 word detailing of
is he
the
gonna
asterisk.
Talk about, is he going to talk about this on this podcast?
I don't know. Probably not. We'll see.
No, Dan. It's just me. I feel like the worst expert ever.
WH can always give good backstory on everything.
Yeah, I know.
W asterisk H.
Yes. The proper pronunciation of Gonske. Gladiator then hits a plancha to the floor. I mean, these were the style of matches where Mike Alfonso, Mike Awesome, shone at. And it really hid his weaknesses because he had like the greatest opponent ever in Masato Tanaka, who when Awesome would come up, I do a lot of crazy shit and you might get hurt doing it. Masato's, whatever, brother. Just bring it.
Because like and apparently there was like, I was listening to an interview recently with someone where they were talking about talking to Tanaka and just him being like, yeah, Mike Awesome was the worst person I ever wrestled. Like,
really?
The worst. And it's like, man, well, you definitely took a lot of beatings to
I mean, he worked stiff, man. And Masato Tanaka, I watched some of those matches where I was like, man, did that guy take a lot of punishment?
Oh, when they do
matches.
A powerbomb and you just see his head bouncing off the mat, you're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I think he's probably, I don't know, after watching this, he's one of my favorite wrestlers, Tanaka. Mm-hmm. Just like, so awesome.
How about the flow that Terry Funk got here? I mean, one of the better blade jobs I've seen in a while.
I don't know, man, because the blood was so unnoticeable amidst all everything, all the crazy shit that was happening.
Well, yeah, this is like one of those things where like if someone bled now in WWE, it would like it'd probably make the papers type thing. Whereas like in this, you're just like, well, they've got a barbed wire baseball bat. Someone's bound to bleed with that thing rolling around. Yeah.
Anyway, this is when fire was introduced, where we had Onita's back lit up with this, where they pour something on him, like a kerosene or something like that, and then spits the fire onto him.
You know it's legit when they do the slow motion and you see the hair singe. And just like the smoke coming off where the hair singed, you're like, oh, that's not a worked fireball.
So after being... given third-degree burns, he is then hit with a spike pile driver, but Onita kicks out. Superman here. Funk then pours the liquid onto Onita for another fire spot, but Tanaka makes the save using a drop kick. Tanaka then in with a tornado DDT for a near fall on Jack. Onita makes the save as Awesome then hits an awesome bomb to Tanaka. Then he goes to the top rope, delivers an awesome bomb off the top through a table. And again, go to the full screen replay here. Awesome bomb off the top through a fucking table. And then Funk hits a moonsault to the floor. Yes, Terry Funk with a moonsault to the floor.
He basically lands on his head.
Yeah. This match, by the way, was 2 weeks after Barely Legal. The ECW pay-per-view he worked.
The
he worked
wire,
double duty on.
Was that the three-way barbed wire?
Three-way and
Beyond
then he
the mat?
Beat Raven. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was featured Beyond the Mat. And the finish actually comes with Kanemura hitting a chair shot off the top to the head of Mike Awesome, and he gets the pin for the team, so trying to put the focus on the younger Wing Kanemura rather than Onita getting the big win for FMW.
It is just a
Kanemura had a horrible look, by the way.
Well,
he looked
did.
Like an indie garbage wrestler.
It would look like a garbage can suit.
He's the everyman. I suppose.
Yeah, and I think that's what you want from like his sort of baby face. He I guess he was like the Cactus Jack not Cactus Jack, hold on. Mick Foley. Sorry.
Who amongst this group of six wrestlers would you say is the model?
Mike Awesome would have been, I guess.
Onita would have been in his day. You know, maybe. Like...
yeah, apparently Onita, one of the people to, I guess, match Scott Steiner in terms of sexual conquest in the industry.
Really?
Yeah, that's the word.
The best is...
Wade doesn't fuck around with research.
You know, at the end, they're all drinking. I guess it looks like maybe it's water, maybe it's sake, and they're, like, spitting into the crowd.
Yeah.
Tanaka does it and then immediately grabs his ribs, like... Blowing that out really illustrates that I've got a bad broken rib.
But, you know, a hardcore spot fest, quite sloppy in many areas. But that's the style.
That's just the style.
You go nuts. You don't think about, you know, I might be setting my buddy's face on fire. It doesn't matter. You just go for it.
And it's weird because people, like, what was that Steen versus Richards main event from ROH, like, a couple months ago?
Where the Border Wars one?
And it was, no, the one after the Border Wars.
The one at Best in the World.
When it was just, like, super stiff and it's like... I bet you they're doing like when they're hitting it and they're hitting it with that precision. I'm like, I wonder if that does way more damage than when it's like super
you got adrenaline for
light
a lot of
sloppy.
These guys.
Like, yeah,
I don't know how Kevin Steen is walking around most days and what pain that guy's in at the age of. I think he's like my age.
He's my
he's
favorite
like 28.
Wrestler. He's my favorite guy in wrestling right now. I think what he's done, and I know like there's a lot of faults with it, but like I think what he's done right now is if he was doing on a larger platform, would be doing what. You know, the same way people talked about Punk and Austin Aries as being revolutionary champions, I think he could have been a revolutionary champion.
Yeah, I think he just finds himself right now. He's on a platform
where
it's just
no one. Like,
the visibility factor is so little right now, and I just feel ROH is just so cold right now.
It is, and he's so good, and he's just like, and he's just, you know, he is what he is, I guess.
They also don't have that real key baby face that, you know, that's the match you want to get to.
But I kind of think you can build that still.
You
like,
could.
I still like the other throwing. Anyway, we can go out.
This is all about. Tangents.
Yeah, it's all about tangents. But I still think, like, it's funny because, like, I was watching Shark cut her promo, and she, like, in the next match, and she reminds me of Steen. And, like, a lot of these people, you see that kind of, like, that attitude. Like, what made the Attitude Era awesome was not, like, the swearing and the middle fingers and all that kind of stuff. What made it awesome was the attitude, like, that you had wrestlers that just didn't give a fuck.
Fred Durst brought the Attitude Era back at SummerSlam.
He got thrown.
Well, he's disputing that now. He's saying that I was not escorted out. I left early to beat the traffic.
Really?
I find that surprising.
Well, but I find it surprising that they threw him out because they have so many pay-per-views that their music – I guess they must film them in such a way that they can just lift all that stuff out. But they were so tied to WWE for so long that – For them to escort him out just seems like, you know, on a pay-per-view. I could see if
I think it's hilarious if they did.
It'd be amazing if they did.
Fred Durst.
Oh,
were you a
so
Limp Bizkit
awesome.
Fan even in 99?
No, God, no.
Never,
no,
eh?
Never, never. I was like, I from 16 on, or 15 on, I was pretty much in like into punk and I remember when that stuff happened. And actually, funny thing is, I know like every weird cameo by every lame hardcore celebrity, but in the Nookie video in the back of the shot, there's the lead singer of YDL, Youth Defense League, which was a very right-wing, borderline fascist, straight-edge hardcore band that was like kind of on the outskirts of the scene for a while. But anyway, that dude later in life, I guess, discovered hip-hop and started dressing in such a way they would be cast as a extra
in a Limp Bizkit video.
Yeah, in a Limp Bizkit video in the background of one of it, apparently. That's the rumor.
And then they got to be the WWF band for a while.
I know.
Before they found Creed.
They're the reason my friend got to meet Stephanie McMahon.
Oh, really? That was the connection?
Yeah, he was working for Limp Bizkit.
Oh, that's right.
They were so tied into WWE at the time, right? Like, they were there. He was like, yeah, we were there, like, every few months. And it's true. Like, they were doing all those pay-per-views. It was such a terrible
thing. Yeah, they did the WrestleMania one year.
And then they did SummerSlam, I guess, that same year or something. Or, like, another pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Or something. Or maybe it was just at another pay-per-view. Anyway, but... Oh.
Back to the days of Roland.
Back, yeah.
The Undertaker. Maybe one day. Maybe he'll reprise the old entrance.
If he brings back the biker gimmick, well, maybe that's where this Ace and Ace thing is building. Maybe he's going to come over as the American Badass and lead this new Hell's Angels faction.
Everyone thinks Sting's going to WWE. Maybe Taker's going to TNA.
That'll be the best trade for nothing.
We go to our main event. Megumi Kudo against Shark Tsuchiya. In a no-rope, electrified, explosive barbed wire, and
barbed wire, barricade, landmine, double hell death match, and for the WWA and independent women's title in a retirement match for Kudo.
This is how you sell a main event.
That's it, man. Not less is not more. More is more.
Megumi Kudo is described as the beauty queen of the death match. When I first saw this woman, I've heard a lot about Japanese wrestling. This is probably going to be a very technical matchup here. And then they throw to these clips, and holy shit,
it is crazy. It is. She is. Watching some of this stuff, and I guess this was, like, really popular in Japan, too, for, like, young girls to be into this kind of stuff. But it is, like, it's so the opposite of what you'd see in the television product.
This is a tough visual. I think it's one thing – like, when people – I'll hear some people say that I don't like watching women fight in MMA, and I don't understand that at all. But watching this – it's a little uncomfortable at times when a woman's getting her forehead carved up with a sickle.
I don't know. I find this – maybe this says a lot about me, but I find this easier to watch than watching someone being forced to bark like a dog. You know, because I'm like –
very fair.
Because I'm like, I know these two – especially at this period, like I know these two people are probably getting a decent payday. I know they're here by choice. When you're watching that WWE stuff and some of the things these women are forced to do, and TNA too, like they should not be given a pass on this. You're like, I'm willing to bet this person backstage was like, I don't want to do this. And they're like, you're doing this. So I don't know. I feel – for me, I find it way less hard to watch this. Like even though it's so violent and horrific, I'm like both these people are there choosing this style of wrestling and they have made money off it. Whereas in WWE or TNA, you're like – TNA especially, you're like – oh man, I hope they're being paid a little bit for this.
Yeah, like Abyss. Some stats on this match. There are 160 explosives in this match. 200 volts of electricity. I don't know my electricity, but that sounds like a lot.
I've licked the top of a 9-volt battery and it stings. So let's. I think.
Oh, 200 volts too.
Okay. Well, how much of these do you think are legit stats?
Well, her hair at the end of the match looks like someone had lit it on fire.
The fire, I don't doubt. But I mean, some of this electricity.
Yeah.
Stuff, how could you really tell?
Well, it was done in such a way where it's like if you went to the ropes, it was like this pyro went off that was fairly safe. I mean,
but
it was all about the visual.
Yeah, but still, like her hair is singed. At the end, so like something singeing her hair, and like whatever singeing her hair probably does not feel good against your skin.
Now, in fairness to Court Bauer, this was closer to the vision of the Punjabi prison match than what we got. Something like this.
There's absolutely no way I see Vince allowing something like this.
But imagine Vince watching
this. Take out the barbed wire, but you could do a match
like this
with the explosion thing and have like –
Pretty safe.
And I think
– minus the sickle, minus the
fire. Yeah, minus the sickle and minus fire. But like you're going into an era now where they're – the thing is that I'm just so bored of WWE is because it's the same stuff over and over again. Like sure, this would be terrible and kind of ridiculous maybe, but at least it would change up that same – match you've seen a thousand
times.
We're
not seeing Kelly and Eve have a match like this anytime.
Yeah, but if Ryback threw Jinder Mahal into a pit of exploding planks, how much better would that be for Ryback going over? if that's the end of the feud. And Jinder Mahal was exploded and never shared from again.
Maybe Paul Bearer, that'll be his next death.
Did you hear that? Did you hear? I know you guys. I'm like talking like a mark to two guys that obviously do not want to think about wrestling when they don't have to. But did you hear that Torch interview with Paul Bearer?
No, I didn't.
He did the Torch talk on Friday or the interview, and it was. He's such a nice guy. He comes off like the nicest human being in this interview. Like, it doesn't have a bad word to say about anyone. And I never knew this, but he managed Undertaker in his very, very first match.
In Texas, right?
Yeah, when he wore a mask against Bruiser Brody.
I did hear that. I think that was one of the matches I searched for our Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
You can watch it on YouTube. I watched it yesterday.
Oh, really?
And apparently Undertaker to this day said the only reason, according to Paul Bearer, the only reason that Percy Pringle went to the ring with him, according to the Undertaker, is so he could be shown the way back because he had no idea how to get back after being beaten up by Bruiser Brody so badly.
What was he, the executioner? What was his gimmick? Mean Mark?
No, it was like something red. It was like something...
Texas Red.
Texas Red.
Yeah.
That was it. Wow, look at you. Texas
fantastic.
Classic wrestling.
Fantastic Bruiser Brody documentary, by the way. I didn't tell you guys about that.
The radio one.
Yeah, the radio one. Really good. Really
It was... that was done years back.
Yeah.
It was
just, I'd never heard it before, and I listened to it for the first time.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks really for checking it out. That was a fun one to put together. I was glad we got to speak to Gary Hart before he passed away, because that was a phenomenal interview we did with him.
Well, it was good because it showed, like... You know, I think he's someone that definitely gets, you know, cast
overlooked.
As the hero. Well, overlooked, but then to wrestling fans, just cast as a hero. But then you hear some of these stories, and you're like, well...
Oh, so you're talking about Brody.
Brody, yeah.
Oh,
he's,
sorry, he seems like Gary Hart.
No, it was like such a complex person.
Yeah, that was it, man. People are somewhat split. It's like, at the same time, it's like, yeah, no one should ever have to die over something so stupid as a wrestling match, but at the same time, you're dealing with people. You're in a weird country, man. You're in Puerto Rico. They play by different rules.
You know, when you hear some of those stories, it's like, you know, like he was confronting him. Like, you don't know. Like, it's a very weird story. Obviously, I'm still siding with Bruiser Brody. Get in the Ring. Did we play that on the show one time? Did you guys play that? That song, Get in the Ring, about Bruiser Brody?
We
Invader One Must Die? We should play that today. Invader One.
Didn't you request
it? Yeah, I think I did request it. I
can't remember.
I've never listened to myself on the show, so I don't know if you guys played it or not.
I don't remember.
Invader One Must Die, but anyway.
I asked Wei the other day if we reviewed Road Wild 1998, and he's like, I have no idea.
I think you did, right?
We did.
That's the one
where
they fight in the back of the truck.
Had the Travis Tritt concert.
Yeah.
They're all blur to you, aren't
they? Yeah, yeah.
But speaking of gross angles, since we're talking, have you ever seen that one where it's, I think, Invader 3? Gets someone jumps off the top rope and does like a foot stomp on his stomach and he starts vomiting blood.
No.
Oh, it's like a famous, and then Invader One comes running back and the whole angle is based around like, I'm getting revenge for Brody because you killed Brody and you killed Bruiser, so I'm gonna...
Nothing's off limits in Puerto Rico.
Nothing.
If it'll draw, let's do it.
Yeah.
All right. Main event time. John Watanabe compares this to Ollie Frazier. I don't know. That's a kind of high comparison point, but maybe.
If Japanese wrestling is your boxing, if female Japanese hardcore.
Yeah, then it's Megumi wrestling. Kudo and Shark Tsuchiya. Both struggle to knock the other off the apron early where they're trying to explode. Kudo is the first to be Irish whipped into the electrified barbed wire, and Shark attacks her back. Kudo comes back, tries a belly-to-back suplex, reverse, gets shoved into the barbed wire a second time, and Shark then pulls out the sickle, and this is where Mouth threw out one of many unbelievables. Unbelievable. How can you describe a woman having her forehead carved up other than unbelievable? This was all Shark here. She applies a...
It would have been better if they'd gone to stunned silence. They both just like, I don't know what to say about this. And just like...
So the baby face here, Megumi Kudo, who looks like, you know, a Japanese pop singer here, basically, has her head carved up. She's been thrown into barbed wire numerous times, and the worst was yet to come. Kudo, she plays a great baby face here. She counters with a chain around the neck and sends Shark onto the explosive barbed wire onto the floor. And then the match continues when Shark gets back into the ring, hits a double underhook powerbomb. Takes that from Kudo for a two count. Kudo then gets powerbombed to the explosive barbed wire, but gets sent over the ropes and gets her leg like hooked onto the edge of the apron, so fell as violently as possible to the floor here. Kudo continually kicks out here. Shark finally spits a fireball at her head, and the referee has to jump on top of Kudo and like mount her to put this fire out. This looked incredibly
disturbing. That's probably what singed her hair. When we're trying to figure out what singed her hair, would have been that fireball.
But her hair just like, you know, it was like nice and long flowing after this. It looked like your beard, basically.
It did look like my beard. Yeah. What do you mean it's not long and flowing Wei?
Oh, well, I'll give it a month maybe.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
So,
no, I just finished a death match. Don't worry. It looks normally.
This selling that followed, maybe this was more than selling. Kudo was literally crying here after this fire spot. She was crying. The baby face was crying during her own comeback. And they both fight into the barbed wire, and Kudo lands on top of Shark on the floor for the win.
Not a definitive win.
No, Kudo goes out on top here. Not the most conclusive finish here, but an incredibly violent women's match. And putting the next women... The standard was set very high for the next no-rope, electrified, explosive barbed wire and barbed wire barricade landmine doublehead deathmatch. Double hell deathmatch.
I thought the match was well done. I like the teasing. I mean, there's a lot of technical wrestling thrown in here when possible.
Yeah, they would do moves.
They didn't really have any ropes to work with.
But that's the thing. That's why you can bring this to North America. Kelly would never have to run the ropes.
Yeah, that's true.
She should be in barbed wire death matches.
Barbed wire death matches.
Yeah.
But she has hair that looks like it will singe.
But the enough product.
Enough product.
But you know, the teasing of the Irish whips into the barbed wire, I thought was done very well, and the storyline was totally there too. I think Shark is an awesome heel,
great heel, and a great babyface. Yeah.
And the thing about her as a babyface though is like she's terrible at promos. Like that promo they have at the beginning, that she's like, "I hope I win." To win against Shark would be awesome, and it's like, wow, she's like not a good promo, and yet still she was so perfect in this match, you know.
And that concludes the show, the FMW 8th anniversary show. Hard to give this show a rating just because it's like an edited version of the show, but for this VHS release, I'm gonna give this one a 5 out of 10.
I'm gonna give this an 8 because I'm judging this not like you would watch if you're watching a wrestling pay-per-view and judging it as a show,
right?
But this is like something that you throw on when people are over. You know, like a party tape.
Yes. That's very true. And that was something you could do. That's what I did. I remember a few years ago, I had a party at my place. I think, Wei, you were at this party. And I decided, these are like non-wrestling fans. It's a Friday night, and we're all just around at this party. It's like 25 people, and I threw on Barely Legal 97.
I think but I do that too. Because, like, if you've never seen that stuff.
Why, I'm less friends.
Yeah, but I think if you're, like, at a party, like, you know, you throw that on, like, sure, it's going to alienate some people, but no one's going to see anything like that. No one's going
to. I also wonder now what people who had no idea what wrestling was thought was going to be on when I said, "Hey, I got a copy of Barely Legal on VHS."
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been hard sell.
Barely Legal.
Would you ever hear the story, the Charlie Sheen snuff movie story?
No. Nope.
Charlie Sheen was apparently, this is like a legendary story, that he was at a party in L.A. and he was. Someone put on a grainy copy of this Japanese movie called Flower of Flesh and Blood, part of the Human Guinea Pig series, which is like these extreme horror films from Japan. And it was like a grainy VHS, and Charlie Sheen saw it and called like the police or whatever, the FBI, or it was like, "I just saw a snuff movie at this party." And they investigated the movie, Flower of Flesh and Blood, and stuff, like to make sure it was fake because they thought it was real. So someone could have seen that and thought you were putting on some weird snuff movie.
Oh, there you go. Maybe.
He's watching deathmatch wrestling. I think they're killing people in it. There's a 65-year-old man wrapped in barbed wire.
What do you give this way?
I give this I'd say a 6.5 out of 10. I would have loved to have seen a lot of these matches in their entirety, but for an 85-minute edited down version, there are a lot of shortcomings in the production, I felt. I did enjoy, you know, them going into the backstory. I thought they did a pretty good job of that into the matches, but I would have much preferred to see full matches. As an introduction to hardcore wrestling, I think this was really good. I think I never got bored within the 85 minutes.
No, this is like great attention deficit disorder style of wrestling.
And if I wasn't such a big wrestling fan who wanted to, you know, care about full matches and whatnot, I think I would have quite enjoyed just watching these high spots, basically.
Yeah. All right. We're going to head over to the message board that Damien's unfamiliar with. And since you're unfamiliar with it,
message board?
I don't know if you heard, we did talk about this on Review and Impact, but your Wikipedia profile has been updated.
I heard.
Wigster.
I hear that the Wigster
is debuting September the 10th on Raw.
I have no idea where that came from. It's funny, my bass player sent me a text like, "Are you wrestling in WWE?
You should have said yes.
And I'm like, "As the Wigster?" Well, no, because September 9th, I think I'm playing a show. Like, that's what I was like, but I'm like, I don't think it's a Monday, so that's what I'm trying to figure out, if I'm playing a show or not. I guess I should figure that out first.
All right, so we have two news items coming out of the show. We got Fozzy, and we can shut down the Wigster.
Down the rumor of Wigster. I know. I'm apparently. Who knows? After my tour with Fozzy, though, maybe I'll come in as his manager. Mm-hmm. Maybe that'll bring him back. Maybe I'll be the girl from those vignettes.
Do you tend that you run into to wrestling fans at shows?
I told you guys, Raw as in Review Away. I've run into a lot of Raw fans.
Wow,
as in Review Away fans.
Really?
Yeah.
Especially the last year, you've really ingrained yourself in the wrestling culture.
Yeah, like it's
public.
People definitely recognize me as a wrestling fan, and I try, like, when I'm going to Mexico or in Japan, like, I talk it up before I get there. in the hopes that someone comes up to me and is like, oh, you got to go here. You got to check out this thing or that.
Are you going to try and watch anything down there?
We're not. Supposedly it's only on Sundays.
Oh, okay.
And we're not because we're just kicking off a tour. We go right to L.A. to play a festival in L.A. With M83. You like them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're playing that thing that we're playing in L.A. Don't know why I felt in case you wanted to know that. Anyway, so we're just there for like 2 days. We're playing some TV show first. Like, that's why we're going down there. Some TV show got in contact and said, we want you guys to play on our show.
Oh, that's cool.
And we're not, you know, being called fucked up. Don't really have a lot of television offers banging down our door. So we're like, oh, okay, well, perfect.
Well, you could go to the convenience store and you can buy some steroids.
That's what I hear. You can
just go right into a convenience store and buy them. Yeah.
I've only been to Tijuana, which is
TJ.
Yeah, which is like – I'm going to describe it as hell on earth because it is like – it's basically like everything you can't have in America but conveniently just on the other side of America's back fence. So it's like as soon as you get over there, it's like people's like throwing like sex shows, like steroids, like Oxycontins, like all these things, and it's like – oh man, oh man. I love Mexican music. I love like old Mexican punk stuff, and like I want to go to Mexico City so badly, but Tijuana was not a good barometer of Mexico. I guess it would be like judging America or judging Canada based on Hull. it's amazing. There's
of
so
all
many
the cities,
strip clubs.
Hull.
There's so many underage kids drinking. It's an amazing country.
All right, let's. We did get some questions for Damien as well as feedback
here.
So let's quickly go through them here. All right, this one comes from Jesse in Philadelphia. A few weeks ago, you guys questioned if people care to hear your random chatter before and after reviews. I, for one, really enjoy it. It's a real struggle to sit through 3 hours of Raw, and Impact hasn't been as good of late. I listen to a ton of wrestling and MMA audio between your site and The Observer, so your random topics and humor mixed in throughout the podcast really make them enjoyable. Okay, this is just pretty much feedback. Well, thank you, Jesse. We appreciate this.
Let's go to Paul Siebert, who says, I'm not familiar with this show, but I'm familiar with the company that released this in North America. Tokyo Pop was a company that made a small fortune translating and distributing manga, Japanese comic books, for the American market. At the peak of its profitability, it was pulling in around $35 million a year. Unfortunately, it tried to diversify itself, resulting in some harebrained ideas, including trying to get manga in newspaper funny pages, producing a web-only reality show about manga-loving comic geeks, publishing a Tiger Beat-esque magazine, and wrestling DVDs. If I recall, this was around the time FMW was trying to make its presence known by helping finance the film Backyard Dogs, which I believe may hold a spot on the IMDb's bottom 100. Have either of you heard of or seen Backyard Dogs?
Is Backyard Dogs a documentary about wrestling? Backyard wrestling?
That was The Backyard.
Okay, no.
That was the more popular one. I don't know.
I kind of remember Backyard Dogs, like reading about it or something.
I would hope that they wouldn't market this main event death match as Backyard Dogs because that would offend.
Yeah.
What?
He was saying it was easier to watch this death match than someone barking like a dog. But if this were going to be called Backyard Dogs.
I understand
that. This is, I think, though, for backyard wrestling, though. Like, I could see why this is like a how-to guide for backyard wrestling, you
know?
Pretty much. Like,
where you can ascend to from the backyard.
We don't have electricity, but we have the bulbs that you would plug electricity into.
Oh, God. We have 220 volts.
Have you guys heard about this crazy video that you can watch online? Speaking of insane videos, and fluorescent light tubes, where there's like people just doing the craziest drugs. Like they start off like doing drugs, and then eventually it's like someone dipping a cigarette in a thing of paint and
Jesus
smoking
Christ.
It. Someone breaking a fluorescent light tube and railing, like snorting the inner dust. That just gives you cancer? Like, it's just, it gets more and more insane.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but think of the hits that you can get.
Oh my gosh.
On YouTube. He continues here. As I understand it, FMW folded in 2002, ending Tokyo Pop's wrestling experiment with it. Tokyo Pop, on the other hand, fell into trouble as Japanese publishing houses like Kodansha opened their own U.S. branches and no longer needed a middleman to distribute their books in North America. Tokyo Pop would cease publishing in the U.S. in 2011, but still maintains a presence in Germany. Keep up the good work, guys, and I'm hoping for a Shikara High Noon review sometime.
All right. This is specifically for Damien from Josh. He wants to know, if these feuds were famous wrestling feuds, what would they be? Which sounds a bit ambiguous. Maybe we'll just get your quick thought on each one of these feuds.
Okay.
First up, John Joseph versus Harley Flanagan.
Oh, man. That's a long, long-running feud and a very I think Harley Flanagan is the hardcore ultimate heel. He is like the Ric Flair of hardcore heels. Not that he's as charismatic as Flair, but he is like... I remember when a couple years ago there was a rumor that he was threatened someone by climbing into their window with an AIDS needle and was going to stab him with a needle full of AIDS-tainted blood, HIV-tainted blood. And that, to me, is the most heelish move someone could threaten to do to
someone.
That's
FMW. So,
that's some FMW. Yeah. So I'd say that is like the I don't even know what feud. That's almost like the Invader 1 versus Bruiser Brody feud, you know, like some real-life dark stuff.
Choke versus Madball with NYC.
Oh, wow. Oh, man. It's hard to say. Like, I don't know who's wrestling. These would be hard to say.
This
wrestling
is completely
feud. It'd be like one man. It'd be like one man taking on a giant company. I love that first Madball 7. I think it's one of the best hardcore records of all time. But we were talking about Choke earlier when we were talking about Last Rites with the infamous Hitler sleeve they did for their 7-inch.
Right.
Choke is one of the great agitators. He'd almost be like a CM Punk on steroids. Probably literally on steroids with Choke. No, I'm just kidding. Choke didn't do roids. But anyway, he was just like such an agitator. There's stories about them going to frat houses and throwing bricks through the window and then waiting for jocks to come out so they could fight him. And there's all these stories about him having these crazy outlandish quotes and stuff. So he'd make like I'm trying to remember some of his outlandish statements. There's a zine actually someone published years ago, just like crazy Choke quotes. So I don't know. Choke is the ultimate talker. I guess that would be and Madball of course runs New York hardcore. So maybe that'd be like CM Punk versus WWE last summer. What it could have been.
Chubby Fresh with OLC versus Earth Crisis with Snapcase and Tony Victory.
Oof. That's not even really a feud, though, per se. Well, I guess there's a really funny prank phone call from OLC on Earth Crisis. I guess OLC would be, I'm going to drop the wrestling, trying to come up with the wrestling things, but I'm going to have to go with, no one wins in that feud. All there's right. No real winners, only losers. Tony Victory, though, runs Victory Records from Chicago, and no CM Punk, apparently.
Our next piece of feedback comes from...
I thought it was going to be about hip-hop, and then me and you could go talk about hip-hop feuds. Yo, what about Mobb Deep?
What's going on?
You didn't hear it?
I'm not following it at all.
Oh, Mobb Deep broke up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it got... Because there was a couple months ago where Havoc on Twitter started saying all this crazy homophobic stuff about Prodigy, and then he's like, the next day he's like, oh, I got drunk in a club and lost my phone, and someone stole it, and
okay.
I must have texted all this stuff to Twitter. And then a couple months... And then, like, last week or something, he's like... Yeah, you remember when I said it was me? I got drunk in the club and lost my phone, and someone else did it. I lied; it was really me. He screw that dude, and then he released this song about him and like claims his evidence that's going to show that Prodigy is gay and all this like. But it's just like the two of them are just falling apart right now.
That's very sad.
It's sad because
it's
like,
very sad that he's using these allegations to.
Well, exactly, but it's also sad that they had to like you know Simon and Garfunkel didn't go out like that.
No, they didn't call each other gay.
No, nope.
wrote songs about
I
each
just,
other.
I just about a month or two ago, did not write this book.
Oh, yet. I know you read Hip Hop Cop,
yes.
Notorious Cop.
Have you read that?
No, I've read I read a bunch of articles that came before that.
Okay,
but I hear it's amazing.
It's interesting. It's like I'm amazed. This guy, he pretty much prefaces it by just how dangerous it is to publicly talk about all this stuff that he just goes right in depth to, like naming names, who is feuding with who, all this behind the scenes of the whole like New York police department and creating like the book of like every single rapper, what their gang affiliation is and stuff.
Have you
like,
seen Beef, the series,
mm-hmm.
those Beef movies?
Oh, yeah.
Those are – they're much more like less journalistic, I guess, than that.
Yeah.
But – But they're
very
more sensational. But like
yeah.
The EPMD feud, I don't know if they do they talk about the EPMD feud in that book?
No.
Where Parrish hired someone to kill Eric Sermon.
Really?
Oh, no. Sermon hired someone to kill Parrish. One of them hired someone to kill. And they still tour together now. But like police got the guys on the way to kill him. Like they stopped these guys at a random stop check thing and were like, what's all this rope and stuff? And they're like, oh, we're going to go kill this dude.
Yeah, it's amazing just the access this guy has. It's like right after the whole Puff Daddy incident where he had the gun at the nightclub.
Yeah.
He's like, Jennifer Lopez is on the phone and her mom is yelling about hanging out with this loser. And he's like writing about this. Like,
wow.
I think he was in the same car or something and it's like, Jennifer Lopez is like trying to defend Puff Daddy to her mom. Just tons of crazy stuff, like all the stuff with Nas.
It's very entertaining.
I should give it to you because I think you'd get a kick out of it.
Yeah, never mind the music. It's all this stuff that's.
But this is all pro wrestling, right? Like you want. Like we're all waiting for a Bieber One Direction feud. I don't mean we as the people in this room or even the listeners at home. I mean the people that I work with every day at Much Music are all waiting for, you know, they're not waiting for this. I should say I'm waiting for.
It's like all these rappers, all of them want to work with Chris Brown. He's like the ultimate heel.
Yeah, he's the ultimate heel. I think he is. It's funny too because like you have no one wants to play heel. In music or, you know.
In real life.
In MMA, it's a lot like that, too.
Yeah. But then once you do play, that's where the money is in being the bad guy. Like, people want the bad guys. And yeah, like, I don't know if I could do it. Like, you know, like, it takes a certain type of personality. Like a Ric Flair to live the villain, you know, to be the villain 24-7. Like, to be arrogant and to be able to pull that off.
Our colleague, Robin Black, used to have a band and very much played a character that way. And we were just talking earlier, like, I think a lot of people, me personally, I never knew it was a character. I always expected him to be an asshole. But, you know, once meeting him, he's the complete opposite.
Yeah. I think once you know pro wrestling and you watch other things in pop culture, you can pick out the pro wrestlers, right? Like, if you know wrestling and you watch Muhammad Ali, you don't have to know that he was a wrestling fan. You can see it, you know? And you don't have to know that Chael Sonnen's a wrestling fan. You can see it.
Yeah.
You know?
I think we always go back and just look at – it's not so much that this is all pro wrestling stuff. It's just this is like human dynamics of selling conflict and people – it's just good guy, bad guy. It's something that people just associate with.
It just so happens pro wrestling is a culture that is so adamant about staying in character in the public that we all associate with it. And that's why we like pro wrestling so much, I guess. One of the reasons.
Well, it's funny because, like, you know that rapper Riff Raff?
Yeah.
And, like, I know I've been talking to people and they're like, oh, it's fake. It's a gimmick. It's like, you know, but it's like kind of like, well, if that is, that's kind of neat. Someone's brought that gimmick into the real world, and now someone's living a gimmick in real music. Well, I guess Vanilla Ice kind of did too, right? Like, wasn't that all supposed to be an act? Like, if you think about it, like, wasn't it supposed to be like he was like a rich kid, and it was like he played that he was from.
I don't know enough about the backstory of Vanilla Ice.
I forget you guys are younger than me. You kids, you babies.
By what,
you literal
2 years?
Baby faces. No, I'm 33. 32. Oh.
32. Okay, 4 years.
Yeah, 4 years.
On Olympic cycle.
Big 4 years, gentlemen. It's like those that grew up with email addresses in grade 7 versus grade 3.
Yeah, that's crazy life. Crazy life these kids are living now.
All right, let's go to Brian Bennett, who says, fuck yeah, reviewing an FMW show. Thank you so much, Damien. I've loved deathmatch wrestling for as long as I can remember. So glad you're bringing it to review away. Most people don't appreciate some of the storytelling and psychology that is in many of these deathmatches, especially in Japan. In the feed I watched, the first 30 minutes was highlights of the undercard. This always bothered me with Japanese tapes. I have a 4-disc set of Big Japan Pro Wrestling best deathmatches, and every match is just like this. But it's still like 15 hours long or something like that. On this show, it kind of makes the undercard matches seem unimportant, but at the same time, it makes the main attractions look even more important, so it's a trade-off. I wish I could have seen Jado and Gato a little bit longer in their old pajama attire. God, that was so awful. It was funny. The Hayabusa Ganasuke match was great, and even better that the video package was awesome. I love how in Japan, pro wrestling is treated like a legit sport and is something to be taken seriously. No tongue-in-cheek. The promos before the matches look like something that could be aired on SportsCenter. I always loved it. Also, Hayabusa was unbelievable in selling the storyline, whatever it was. This was such good storytelling from the video package and Hayabusa at the end of the match alone. It made me more enticed than any 3-hour Raw I could possibly hope for, and I don't even speak the language. I did some research and found this was a hair versus mask match, and Hayabusa wanted to shake his hand instead of shaving his head, which we reviewed. I was surprised to see Foley on the show, seeing he was in the Fed at the time, and it was even colder for Mr. Funk, Terry Funk, to come out with the ECW title after winning it a few weeks prior. Onita is the craziest motherfucker in the history of the business, without a doubt, even though Terry was arguably the lightest deathmatch worker of all time. Some might say this isn't wrestling, but I would disagree because if you look at it with a clear conscience, it's obvious the story is that this...
Clear conscience.
It's obvious the story is that this is a fight and these guys are just beating the hell out of each other. It's really that simple. And Megumi Kodo is my favorite women deathmatch wrestler, with Lufisto being a close second. And this match had a really epic feel to it. The crowd was amazing. The girls were amazing. It was just a great ending to the show. 8 out of 10. If you... Okay, yeah, go ahead.
All right, let's power through these last few here. I watched this version with the English commentary, and I wish I'd watched the Japanese version. The show itself looked pretty decent for what it was, but it was impossible to get into any of the matches. They were heavily clipped and constantly being interrupted by instant replays. Completely ruined the flow and made it impossible to build any emotional investment. And the announcing was really bad. I really enjoy listening to Dan Lavransky on The Law, but because I do listen to him on the radio, I know what he sounds like when he's passionate about something, and I never got that sense on this video. Nothing he said was bad, and he even provided some insight from time to time, but it all sounded scripted, and I felt like he was saying what he thought he should be saying, and John Watanabe was just terrible. He miscalled moves, mispronounced names, and everything he said sounded fake. As for the matches, they weren't bad. The heavily clipped stuff at the beginning was entirely forgettable. Hayabusa versus Ganosuke looked like it would have been pretty good, but had they not cut so much out and thrown in so many damn replays. Six-man tag was pretty good for a hardcore brawl. I've seen better six-mans, and I've seen better hardcore matches. And gives us a 4 out of 10. Question for Damien. What did you think of Fuji Rock? I've been lucky enough to have been to that festival 5 times, and I've loved every one of them. I wish I could have gone this year, but I didn't have the money. I would have loved to have seen Fucked Up play there.
It was amazing. It was like everything we've talked about in Japan, like a completely different experience than playing anywhere else. I didn't really get to see too much of the festival because they kept you like on a pretty tight schedule of press and stuff. And then we did an autograph signing, so they wouldn't let us walk around. Like, I was like, oh, I'm just going to walk to my stage. They're like, it's way too far. I'm like, well, then how are people going to walk to the stage if they're coming to see the show? They're like, well, they've been walking there. And so I'm like, okay, like, it's weird. So I really wish I'd gotten to see more. It was playing there was spectacular. Like, I couldn't, you know, like our other experience in Japan had I'd never had people like sing along before when we played there previously or be into the music as much. So it was a unbelievable experience. And some of the worst food I've ever had at a festival.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like I didn't eat off where you could eat out in the public, but the food they gave the bands was like, and I love Japanese food so much. And it's like, why would you do burritos? Like, no one's here wants a burrito. Like who would want a burrito? Like,
give me some Kobe beef.
Yeah, like, I'm like, oh. But it was a fun time nonetheless.
What was the cleanliness like in this festival? Because, like, the Japanese are known for being a very clean culture.
It's also, like, you know, it's, like, spectacular because it's, like, in that, you know, green, beautiful valley. Yeah, it's very clean, I would say. It once again, though, it's like a festival, so you see the worst of every culture. You know, you have drunk people wandering around, but definitely less so than when you were in, like, you know, Scotland at Tea in the Park, right, where I've witnessed people urinating on other people that are passed out by accident, like, right, just being like pulling down their pants and peeing, and then there's someone sleeping below them, and just like, they don't care.
That happened at the Eaton Center recently. That was a big story that got picked up.
I heard about that.
Yeah,
it was a news.
Some fucker pissed on a homeless guy.
Homeless guy. Horrendous, you know, like, which, you know, goes to show that, like, once again, that horrendous things can happen everywhere. Not just Scotland at a festival. People in Toronto will do it without the excuse of being at a festival.
All right, let's go to David H., who says, I just wanted to say how big of a fan of Damien I am. I recently finished listening to the entire archive, and my favorite is probably the 94 Rumble. The 45-minute intro was pure gold. My mind was especially blown when you guys started talking about Mayhem and Burzum. Probably the number 2 and 3 bands in black metal. Number 1 being Immortal, not the TNA faction. My question to you guys is, what do you think of video game music as a genre? It's really the only music I listen to regularly nowadays, and I really got turned on to it more a few years back thanks to Botchamania. I love the show. The new site looks awesome. Hopefully this review will break the 3-hour mark, and you three can save me from my work day as you have done countless times in the past. Video game music.
Oh, man. Like, I don't know, like, what would that be, video game music? Like, it's like, because I know in Japan, like, you have people buying, like, the soundtrack to vinyl,
no,
Final Fantasy VII.
I think he means, like,
classic video game music?
Like, 8-bit music. Yeah. Like, people that actually compose music in 8-bit.
Oh, like the glitch pop stuff in China. When I was in China, that was, like, really big. There was a bunch of, like, people that redid Game Boys to do music.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that type of stuff.
I guess, like, you know, I love the DIY nature of it, that people are doing it themselves. Like, for me, though, I don't know if I could, like, there's just, I kind of have, like, this weird psychological aversion to electronic music that doesn't have gothic vocals over top. You know, if it's not, like, some English guy emoting in like a hobo. I can put up with it. But I don't know. Like, I know you're a big dance music fan. Mm-hmm. You're a big pop. You like some dance music too, right?
Oh, yeah. I like tons of stuff that you guys would frown upon.
I just can't. I don't know. I've never been able to get into it. Like, I wish it would have made my life a lot happier, I think. If I was like in the 90s into raves, oh my gosh, it was so miserable. Being like the only kid in my class into punk. I wish I could just techno and have gone to raves.
Well, like with dance
I would have
music.
Lost my virginity before I was 20, you know?
Yeah.
Or died.
One of the two. Or died. But I would have died not a virgin.
But like with punk, there are like so many.
I could have died at a punk show and I would have died with my virginity.
You might have woken up not realizing that's true. You're no longer a virgin.
That's true.
But like with punk or like anything.
You're going to get fired from the Fed now.
Like with punk and like with any types of music, there are so many different genres of dance.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can know one but not know anything about the other. I don't know, like the 8-bit stuff I've heard. I don't think I'd ever buy an album or you know pay to see some people play this stuff in concert. I mean, my whole familiarity with it is just simply based off of the video game. So I think it's cool when guys, you know, park outside of a fan expo and, like, with their Game Boy start playing, like, you know, the theme songs to the Super Mario Brothers or something. But I don't know if I'd ever listen to a whole album.
And also my band used to cover the Mario cave music, You're in Trouble.
That's
not
awesome.
Fucked up. You're in Trouble, my band, when I was a kid. So I was kind of first on this thing.
And let's finish off with Brian from Buffalo. I watched this with the sound off as I've outgrown Japanese commentary. I've heard there's an American version with mouth on commentary. Confirmed. Would have liked to have seen that. Also, the version I saw showed the undercard in clips instead of full matches, which was hard to follow. Watching Hayabusa is always a treat, and the six-man with Funk Foley, Awesome, and Tanaka was great. I cringed when Funk did that moonsault to the floor and pretty much missed. How old was the freaking guy at this point? To me, Foley looked sloppy and lost here, and there's not many duos who have chemistry as excellent as Tanaka and Awesome, no matter what country they've been in. Ending the event with a women's match is as far-fetched an ending to a card as the IC title like SummerSlam 92 nowadays. Hard to believe women would bump like this, and I laughed when the ref objected to the use of that blade. It's a death match. Last time I checked, I was waiting for weird lights and sound effects when the explosions went off, but then I remembered Russo didn't book this match. I've always believed there's a right way to do a death match, and while they don't always get it right, FMW is leaps and bounds better than anything CZW puts out. Two good matches here, 4 out of 10 for the version I saw.
I'm getting a sense that the edited aspect of this tape was probably from the original
Japanese
tapes,
one, yeah, most likely. So if I didn't watch that full version, but I guess that had edited clips as well. So I guess that was just the way that Yokohama Deathmatch was meant to be seen in edited form,
in clips.
Well,
sorry, 3 hours with no, like, there was no exploding barbed wire in those early matches, so we didn't miss anything.
No. How can you promote Yokohama Deathmatch and just bore people?
Bore with wrestling. Ugh.
Anyway, so thanks everyone for posting your feedback up there on the Law message board. It does exist for people like Damien. If you've never been, it's lawradio.proboards.com. Free to sign up, and there you get to interact. You would be like a celebrity on there with people. It'd be like Damien post.
But also, like, I would, like, once again, this goes back. When message boards, like, first started happening, I was on message boards, and then like a couple years ago, I realized I was like a dick on message boards. Like, I was just like,
you
get like a real smarmy attitude when you can hide behind your computer. Like,
oh, yeah.
And that's what I had to.
You should post anonymously on our board.
Yeah, I should.
You should troll us.
Yeah, troll an anonymous troll. John, I do. What's that wimp doing talking about MMA?
I thought it's called live audio wrestling.
Yeah, what's that with the YouTube? Oh, the funny, my mother-in-law yesterday was like, I was watching this video on YouTube of that band Pussy Riot, and the comments are very disturbing, and it's like trying to explain YouTube comments to an adult. Like, no, you don't understand. That's what they do.
Yeah.
She's like, but they're all just really horrible. And I'm like, yeah, but that's every video on YouTube is just full of horrible comments. Like, that's the YouTube comment. It's just a horrible thing. And she's like, but why? And it's like, because that's what they do.
It's fun.
It's what people do.
Maybe your mom and Way's dad need to do a podcast.
Well, this is my mother-in-law.
Mother-in-law. Sorry.
My mom is an anonymous poster and hater on a bunch of message boards.
She's a lurker?
No, I'm just kidding.
She's on our board, probably.
Yeah, she is. She's like, what did you say?
That's who Jason X is. All right.
That's Jason Hervey.
Yes, it could be.
Jason X.
Probably. Can be very angry at times. That guy, actually, he tweeted me on Sunday saying,
The stream for SummerSlam was 20 seconds behind the pay-per-view. You spoiled the main event for me.
The illegal stream you were watching of this pay-per-view.
It was one of the best tweets I've ever received.
You should retweet it at WWE. Like,
this is the tweet that defines a generation. Entitled and freeloaders.
Oh, my gosh. SummerSlam, eh?
Cool. Well, did you watch it?
Yeah. I didn't watch all of it. I skipped the beginning stuff on the legally purchased replay last night. But I'm really excited that Brock went over. I think that's like the only thing they could do. Like, I was just expecting to be like, well, that's it, WWE. I'm never gonna watch you for a while. After last night, if Triple H had beaten Brock, like I thought they were gonna do, I was gonna be like, you know,
I'm not doing that podcast tomorrow.
Yeah,
I'm done with wrestling.
Sorry, no, I still love wrestling. But I for all the technical problems, I've really gotten into the ROH TV product.
Yeah, I try and watch as much as I can, and I wanted to see their. I ordered their iPay-per-view last week.
Yeah, I was away, so I didn't.
And it was we wanted to talk about it on the law, but it's like the show was on a Saturday night, and it didn't get put online till Monday night. So it was like, man, it's like after the Sunday, I had Sunday morning reserved to watch that pay-per-view, couldn't, and I still haven't had a chance to watch it yet. So they kind of lost me on that one.
And I guess that the big twist at the end apparently was a gimmick when Kevin Steen knocked those two guys out.
It's weird. It was like these two guys, they were in the front row. They were there the whole show, like acting like fans.
Acting like dicks, apparently.
Yeah.
Because apparently everyone in the around, like I read a couple reports that were like, they were horrible. And like at one point, Kevin Steen mocked to hit one with a chair. Mm-hmm. But they were just being, and in the end, he knocked him out with one punch each.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, weird. But anyway, SummerSlam though,
I was happy.
I thought it was a good show.
I think the one thing is, it's like, it's real, with the exception of Daniel Bryan, no one feels exciting right now. Like, even Dolph Ziggler, who's amazing, doesn't feel exciting. And Daniel Bryan's the only person that, and the indication last night is at least they seem to get it, but he's the only one that comes out. Like, even Punk now feels like part of the company, you know? Like, Daniel Bryan's the only person that feels like they're kind of like exploding out of it a little bit. So I hope like, you know, they give Daniel Bryan like a really good run, because he's like, he's doing amazing with whatever they give him.
I think he's one of the most valuable guys right now, just in terms of a character, and especially now we go to 3-hour Raws. It's like, that's a guy that can go out, do two segments, no problem, with any guy on
the
roster.
And wrestle 30 minutes.
Like, he's such a valuable asset. He's quietly perhaps been the best performer in the company this year.
Yeah, I think so. And he's worked with the least, right? Like, it's not like someone they're giving, like, you know, the main event to. Like, he's someone who's taking the main event. Maybe he's the guy that's going to kind of pull it back in course. It just feels like from Summer of Punk to this summer, the difference is like astronomical.
But the greatest part about the CM Punk promo was
how
that
we met.
It led to our meeting.
I know,
the
friendship.
Three of us.
CM Punk, you know, if he would ever respond to me on Twitter, period, I could tell him that he's responsible for our friendship.
Yeah.
Now, so how was that? What do you mean?
We went to shoot that politics on Queen Street. That was the first time I ever met him.
And I didn't
get the relationship.
And I told
CM
you,
Punk,
I'm like, yeah, like, and I was like, oh, that CM Punk, but he doesn't respond to me on Twitter, so I can't. Nor does Kevin Steen. What is it with wrestlers never respond to me on Twitter? I've struck it huge.
You've,
Jericho. It all comes down to Jericho.
You two have had a, I don't know. There's something about the wrestling industry and Damian
something
Abraham,
about
maybe.
The wrestling industry hates me. It's because I did that because I talked about buying a Ribera Steakhouse jacket and not being a worker.
Maybe next year. Who knows? Maybe next year you'll be performing at SummerSlam.
Oh, my gosh. No, I don't think so. You have to be in shape. You know, like, everything about WWE's policy says you should not go there to me. Like, oh, every policy they have, like... Oh.
I was saying more in the Kevin Rudolph spot rather than doing a match.
No, I was thinking doing a 5-star match. That's the
fun. Like, that's the assumption. Like,
I think 1 year from now, I'll be ring ready to main event
a punk
WWE
cover
show.
Of Don't Give Up.
Yeah, Don't Give Up. I think, if anything, I'll be in the Fred Durst spot next year at SummerSlam, being dragged out of
my
ass.
You've got to top it, though. You've got to, like, show, like, a mangina or something on camera, see if you get escorted out. No, I was just trying to beat traffic.
What a great visual.
Yeah, they probably bring me into the back, and there'll be Bradshaw and Hardcore Holly.
How rude.
That's the most insane ringtone.
That's how I wake up in the morning.
Whoa. That'll wake you up. Yeah, it'll be Hardcore Holly and Bradshaw waiting for me back there, just...
Always pounding ass.
locker room justice.
Then you just scream out to Brian Danielson, I gave you your theme music. Yeah. Then you stop talking to me.
And stop using it.
Jericho's like, fuck him.
I was talking to my friend, this guy Tom that I'm friends with, who wrote the article with, and I'm like, did you ask him about my music? He's like, no, I forgot. And I'm like, still don't have an answer for why he doesn't talk to me. I'll find out.
Well, we're going to wrap things up way next week. I don't know whose pick it is to review something.
I picked SummerSlam, so it would be yours.
Oh, it would be mine. Yeah. So
what
next
are you guys
week,
building up to now? What's the pay per view next one?
Well, we got September. Legendary. I don't know. Unforgiven series of shows that they used to put on.
The Unforgiven. Actually, there were some good Unforgivens, but I think you've reviewed all the good ones, right?
Oh, you know what? I'm trying to think of.
Go to the thread.
We could. I just shut down my laptop. So
why don't we go to the thread?
Let's see. I'm going to reserve the right to say no if it's not an interesting show.
Yeah, absolutely. Why don't you guys talk?
Maybe.
I don't know. Damien's kind of shy if you didn't notice.
Yeah. Hi, guys.
2 hours.
This is like 3 hours now we've been talking.
We've probably hit around 10 hours of talking with you.
That's awesome. I'm glad. It makes my week harder, but I'm glad when you guys talk, like your podcast went on for hours, I'd be happy.
Well, tonight
I've never hit a point where I've been like, okay,
enough.
What are you doing when you're listening? I'm always curious to know what people are doing.
It ranges. Walking. I walk a lot. Going to the bathroom. Looking in record stores. I mean, going number two in the bathroom, not like masturbating or anything. Don't think like that.
It works for that, too.
I wasn't curious what exactly you were doing.
Well, I just don't want you guys to think that I'm, like, in there masturbating, like, listening to you guys talk about wrestling. It'd be, like, a weird thing to get off on.
In the span of these 5 minutes, I've thought about Damien's mangina and thought of him.
I guarantee you, in a weird note, I guarantee you there's, like...
Let's just say the masturbation involves the mangina.
Wow.
Oh, wow. No,
I'm just kidding.
We're getting technical.
I just put on a review away, light some candles.
Yeah. Do you think audio porn exists out there?
Oh, I'm sure it does.
It's got like to. That seems
phone
sex.
Phone sex.
Yeah. Yeah, but you don't hear of anything.
Literary,
like,
literary porn exists.
Like downloading shit. Like,
I'm sure there are MP3s of like...
Well, if you've got video, why would you?
Because I think it's something different. It's like, believe me, we were talking about like in Japan, you can buy like used underwear.
Yeah, I'm sure there's still an industry.
Machines.
Like porn movie stores survive because there's people that like buying porn in a movie store.
Yeah,
you know, like you got to.
There's
think,
some people
like,
they enjoy the going into a store and being embarrassed.
Well, part of the thing with the fetish is like it's a ritual, right? Like, so there's always got to be a ritual involved. So I'm sure for phone sex, there's got to be people that are like paying for phone sex still, like being like. Putting in their $10 a minute because they're addicted to they're attracted to the fetish of paying for phone sex, you know, like
interesting.
Yeah.
It's a weird culture out there.
It's a weird culture in Japan. The weirdest thing when you were there, did you go to what is it called? Like
Mangina
Mangrove or something? It's like this giant used toy store, like it's vintage toy store, like five levels, and one of the levels is adult only, and it's got like
anime characters, but like dressed very
like hentai,
and like
statues,
costumes
and
too,
costumes,
right? Yeah,
and then dolls that you buy like $50 wigs for, a little doll, like a doll like that, and like I say,
it's a culture that takes everything to the extreme,
everything, and it's also the place where like. You better bring every cent you have because you will spend every penny. Every second you're like, that looks amazing. That looks awesome. There's a cafe you can go to where you can hang out with cats.
Sounds brilliant.
I love this, just where these ideas come from.
In Japan, it makes sense, that one, because like you have a very small apartment. You know, it's probably really not feasible to have a cat. You do like animals. Why not just pay to hang out with some cats for a while?
Then the strays end up probably in the food section. And
eventually. In Japan. Actually, in Japan, I guarantee you there is a cat-serving restaurant. In Japan, there's a restaurant that serves raw chicken as
raw
like sushi.
Chicken.
They do sushi with like other proteins.
Sounds so crazy to me.
Raw chicken?
Salmonella.
Salmonella.
They must clean it somewhere.
Well, but there's
it's
cooked in it. I think it's just about very fresh. It's probably like you have to have as fresh as possible. Salmonella develops, right? But like,
can't you put like some spices on it to eat?
I don't know. Like if you salmonella spice, I don't know. Like there's a spice that kills it. Like that's the thing. It's salmonella. Like that's why I think like that's why you never hear of, you hear raw beef, but you never hear raw pork and raw chicken. But they have this restaurant there that does it.
All right, let's go to the thread. What are you guys feeling like? WWF, WCW, or something outside?
Well, we'd probably go back to something. I find if you guys do two weird ones in a row, it's a little much. So probably go back to WWF.
Nichey.
F or WCW.
All right, let's go to WWF.
WWF, and let's look at the top vote getters.
I don't
want
to do a SummerSlam.
Well,
I think we've exhausted SummerSlam.
We'll look at the top vote getters, and at WWE Unforgiven 2006 with 5 votes is our current top vote getter.
Okay. But that was the Toronto show.
Okay.
That was Toronto.
Oh,
so
really?
Let's
sounds
do
good.
That.
I will look forward to it.
Trish's retirement match and Edge Cena, TLC.
Whoa.
Back when John Cena was a headliner.
Did you go to the show?
I didn't go to that show. I watched at the station. Agnew went.
Cool.
Agnew sat with Trish's family, I think.
Oh.
Wow. Yeah. Didn't headline last night.
That was, you know what? And I can grab that because that night, I remember we had Trish on the law right after her match live.
Perfect.
Oh, that works out really well.
Amazing. Great choice, Damian.
Tell you, that's what I'm here for, you know? FMW 1 week and a great WWE pick the next.
Oh, you know what? If I'm not mistaken, this was Kane versus Fake Kane on that show as well.
Beautiful.
Oh, is that, that's what's Luke Gallows,
Luke Gallows.
Right? Oh, wow.
So fantastic. I am excited
I don't
now.
Know why they didn't do a Fake Kane, Fake Undertaker match.
Yeah, they could have.
They went around at the same time.
I know, but like, bring Fake Undertaker back. Is he busy?
Yeah. You could have had Fake Undertaker, Brian Lee.
You could have gotten Super Leather from Yokohama Deathmatch to do it. He could have played him.
Brian Lee and Drew Hankinson. That was a dream feud.
You know what? I'm glad someone also brought up Last Night in the Law, because I meant to bring this up. Yeah, all those dudes in Ace and Ace have Prospect on their vests.
Yeah, they made mention of that.
Which
I think that's merchandise that they want to sell.
But Prospect in for bikers, that means you're a trainee. Like you become a prospect and then you eventually become something else and then you become a full patch.
Oh, so they're all working.
So they're all
for somebody.
Like they're all underlings and who loves bikers? Eric Bischoff.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
So guess who's that's who
Brandon
I'm
Rick Steiner and all his other biker buddies.
The Return of Road Wild.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think God.
Yes. Yeah. In Sturgis. You can confront Aces and Eights in Sturgis.
Yes. Oh, Lord. On that note, we got to get out of here. But thanks, as always. Damian, let our listeners know what's coming up on the tour, where they can follow you online.
At Left for Damian is my Twitter. Tour wise,
you gotta change it. Maybe you should change it to the Wigster.
The Wigster, yeah. You can catch me on Raw on September the 9th. No, coming up, we have a tour in the West Coast, doing 2 shows in Vancouver and Victoria in the beginning of September.
How about the Wedge? When's that moving?
Wedge. Wednesdays now at 11:30 at night. So adjust those PVRs or stay up late and get ready.
8:30 on the West.
8:30.
Who's coming up on the Wedge?
Who did we have recently? Like a ton of stuff. Cold Specs. We just did the Off. Grimes. Trying to remember who else. Oh, Twin Shadow. Lots of stuff. And I'm also open Daniel Bryan.
Oh, you are interviewing Dan.
I'm going to work on it.
Cool.
I'm going to work on it. I think this will be my next one.
Smooth the heat out.
Play his Kimia Dawson collabo song.
Yes.
You know, talk indie rock with him.
Very cool.
Talk. You know, he's a huge fan of No Logo, that book.
The book.
Yeah.
The
Naomi Klein book.
I bought that book when I was 16. Couldn't do it at 16, but it's a book that I was like, I should like this book.
Yeah.
And it was tough to get into at the age of 16.
Yeah. The problem with that book also is it's like the paradigm has shifted.
Sure.
So when you read that book now, it seems very
I think she wrote a follow-up a few years later.
Shock Doctrine.
Yeah.
She wrote one and amazing writer, but I think.
She's Toronto-based, right?
Yeah. When I did that food bank thing, she was on the food bank, her and Abby Lewis.
Oh yeah,
they're partners. Her and you know Abby Lewis. Remember him from
New Music,
yeah, and then he was on CBC.
How was that panel you did with our buddy Sam Sutherland?
Oh, it was awesome. The punk rock panel.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah,
it was
fun.
Sam's book's amazing too. Perfect.
Yeah, when's it out? Is it in the fall?
October.
October.
Yeah, I think I'm doing the book launch with him. Perfect Youth. We're gonna do the same thing for the book launch.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Just sat around playing old records and talking about like weird punk. The history of punk. A weird, weird history of punk rock.
The star of the class of 07.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Him and Ellen Wong. She was the female in Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Why was he the star? Because he was in a band?
Sam?
Yeah.
He's got a book coming out.
Oh, he got a book. You guys are working in the biz.
No, we don't have a book.
We weren't in a movie.
There's book, and then there's podcasts.
Yeah, but I think
until we make out with Michael Cera on film, the bar has been set pretty lofty, Damien.
You know one of the best stories? I know the guy in that. I know a guy who's in that movie, and they bought his name off him because he auditioned for himself and couldn't get the part as himself in the movie. And the character in the movie is played by some other guy who is him, dressed like him.
We like your character, but you're horrible at it.
They wanted to buy his name off him, but then they offered him no money. So he's like, what the hell? And they raised it and offered him more to buy his name on rights off him.
The movies are just gross.
Scott Pilgrim, a lot of people got paid off that. Ben from my band's an extra in it. Chris Murphy from Sloan was the band coach in that movie.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
It was a movie. I enjoyed that movie. It was a weird one, but it was like, I won't say like loved the movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was an interesting concept. Something different, I had a soft spot because I didn't even know it was I knew it was shot in Toronto, but I didn't know they were going to like pretty much base it in Toronto.
Yeah.
I was like, Jesus Christ, where pizza?
The comic is more so.
I never read the comic. I don't think I've ever read a comic, so I'm sorry. But
I felt weird about that movie because
you clearly hated it.
But I did.
Just
hate
don't want to disagree too much with me. That's okay.
I didn't hate
it. I'm not tied to this movie.
My wife liked, and I could see why I should like it, but it was one of those things where it was like too much of why I should like it, and I was like, I don't like it.
Ellen Wong was supposed to do a podcast with us, but Wei thinks it's too much of a stretch. It's one thing because you're a fan.
I never said that.
Yeah, you kind of implied.
Maybe I did.
Alison Pill. I know that girl. Alison Pill's in that movie too. She's on that Newsroom show now. Do you watch that Newsroom?
Yeah. I love Newsroom, a little preachy at first with what you're going to get with Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
I found the last three episodes, they've really found their stride.
I think they're finding their stride.
As soon as that fucking love thing was – they've kind of dialed back on that. I hate that storyline.
Yeah.
But outside of that, I really enjoy Jeff Daniels. The one guy who plays Don, the kind of capitalist.
Yeah.
I think he's great.
Yeah.
Jane Fonda is really good in it. Yeah, I've enjoyed that series. It's really kind of grown on me.
Yeah,
I went in with lowered expectations.
I watched that. I'm enjoying it. I think almost like I wish the new stuff, like when they break – I wish that was its own show.
Yeah.
Where they just break down those news stories like, you know, a year after the fact and you can be like, how did this become real?
At some point, they're going to catch up to present day.
Yeah, but they got to take a break.
But they
got to
take a season, right?
You're always going to have a new cycle of news. If they're
smart, I think they'll always – keep it in the past by a few months because that way they can always have a hindsight view.
Some people have been critical of it's really easy to play, you know, the noble journalists who get to.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like a fake show.
It's a show, you know what I mean?
And they show him making mistakes too, like when in that debate with that black Republican.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The way they had a Sloan Sabbath, she gives away that off-the-record source air and stuff. They try to make them somewhat – I don't know. It just seems Aaron Sorkin is such a polarizing figure to so many people that he does breed a lot of criticism.
Well, he fired all the writers, right, except his girlfriend?
No, he's saying that's not true. He was saying that they've hired more writers. He said that was completely wrong and just went on this whole rant against the internet.
You know, Aaron Sorkin, I was never a big West Wing person, but all that dialogue reminds me of the Gilmore Girls. Anytime I see people doing that super fast dialogue where
Dawson's Creek.
Yeah, the Gilmore Girls, Dawson's Creek is all I think. It's just like – it just takes me right out of it when it's like
– the pauses in a conversation should be just as important.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you take that out, it just feels fake.
It feels really fake.
Yeah.
Anyway. We should do a podcast where we script it like that.
We just cut out all the pauses.
We have these ridiculous analogies and like
– use big words.
Non sequiturs.
Oh, it'd be rough.
Damien would not download that.
And just hard pan each voice, so it's just like da 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 in each ear.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
All right. Oh. We're gonna wrap things up, folks. This has been another Damien Abraham fantastic show. 220 we're hitting, I believe.
Oof.
So we're gonna go out with some music here from Mr. Abraham's catalog. What are we listening to right now? What is creeping up on us here underneath our words?
What should we be hearing? Right now you are going to hear – did I play Suck It by Teen Grit Combo on here before? I think I did. That's the problem. I'm getting all these things now mixed up in like the songs I want to play on here versus the songs I have played on here.
I think you'd have played that one.
Okay, let's hear The Crusher by the Novas, the famous song. Crusher.
All right. The Crusher. Here we go out. Goodbye.
Brains.